go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we go. Hard to believe. But, and I'm happy to announce this. I got to tell you. We have entered the last full week. The last week. Screw it. Of February 2015. Begone. Let not thy shadow catch thee standing. Stand not upon the order of thy going, but go at once. Yeah, it's the 23rd day of February, 2015. And this god-awful month ends this week. Yeah, I'm happy. We had a brief respite. Well, it wasn't so much a respite as a half-spit that we had over the weekend. We got hammered with about a foot of sloppy snow. I know over east of here where our dear friend Kelly lives, it just kept snowing and snowing. And this wasn't that dry, powdery stuff. Oh, hell no, no. This was the wet slop. And absolutely just devastated everything. Power managed to stay on. So, you know, kudos to the error-prone bunglers at Appalachian Power for managing that much, right? So, but the funny thing about it was the temperatures got up, we crossed the 40-degree mark over the weekend.
Woohoo!
Yeah. But not for long. We're back down below zero again tonight. And then next week, we've got a couple of nights of 10 degrees or so. And it's going to be cold into the first week of March. But we'll get through. I got me a hot cup of decaf here. No decaf jokes, please. I mean, you just don't want to see me on caffeine. You don't. It's not pretty. I got me a hot cup of decaf, and I'm pretty much, I think, in good shape and raring to go. Some program notes, if you please. And that is this. All this week should be a regular broadcast week. And by the way, Dr. Bill would have been back on air today, save for the fact that he had a water main burst outside his house, and that required sort of, well, it's hard to broadcast with jackhammers and backhoes going outside the studio. Ah, thank you. Thank you, Jeremy. Loud and clear on TuneIn. Bob, we feel your pain in Vermont. 38 yesterday, 3 today, and hella wind chill lows. Right. And that's the northern version of what we're getting this evening. And the thing is, all the slop that started melting and turned back into ice. Beautiful, isn't it? But Dr. Bill will be back on the air tomorrow and Wednesday. There's a program note, however, and this goes to next week. I have not gone on the road with the program in a very, very long time. Well, I'm going on the road with the program next week. We're off to Washington, D.C., where our good friends at Families USA are putting on a radio row in conjunction with the arguments that are being had in the Supreme Court next week regarding the constitutionality of federal subsidies to state-run exchanges. Or the insurance exchanges. Actually, the question is, more properly presented, whether the states who, in their Confederate wisdom, declined to set up their own exchanges can have subsidies for health insurance provided through the federal exchange. It gets kind of esoteric. What it boils down to is it is yet another attempt by those right-wing fiends of the Heritage Foundation and the Competitive Enterprise Institute and the American Enterprise Institute and the Booger-Eating Enterprise Institute and the picking our teeth with our toenail clippings Enterprise Institute, all of those, to try to take health care away from American citizens. You know, because freedom. Because everybody is ever so much more free when they can get sick and just die. Because they're not among the Calvinist elite upon whom God showers his blessings and wealth. What I don't understand is, in light of the fact that there's less than 500 billionaires on the planet, how do they expect to run health care on nothing but billionaires? Not that many more millionaires. Something like more than half the planet, maybe 40% of the planet, I think. Yeah, it's 40% of the planet exists on somewhere around $2 a day, relatively speaking, all currencies being balanced. Right. So there will be guests and there will be interviews, and I'll be broadcasting live from noon to 3. From Washington, D.C., and there may be another treat involved. I'm not going to announce that yet until I hear for certain. So, anyway, we're on the road next week, and, of course, that'll be the beginning of March. And so we'll be on the road Tuesday, broadcasting Wednesday and Thursday, and driving home on Friday. So that means no actual programming on Tuesday and Friday. Like I said, I'll be live from noon to 3 Eastern Time, which is 9 to noon Pacific, and then we will replay it in the evening. Okay? All clear? So, anyway, I have an announcement this evening. You know, every evening we try to raise $150 to keep everything going here, keep the lights on, the packets passing, the electrons chatting. The note in the chat room this evening says, scientists say the world is made up of protons, neutrons, and electrons. They forgot to mention morons. And that's so very true. So we're trying to raise $150 this evening. And we're actually a little bit ahead, and it would be nice to stay that way. And so there's a premium out there. News Ninja Carol Baker is providing this premium. Now, there's a place up in Independence, Missouri, not too terribly far from Hooterville, and it's called Mugs, and they make their very own homemade root beer. Yes, I said root beer. And Carol tells me that it is absolutely divine if you are a root beer aficionado, which I are. My dad used to tell me how his grandfather, my great-grandfather, Pa Davis, the guy who smoked his own hams and bacons and pork loins and all of that, also made his own root beer. And my father would wax fondly remembering that. Love to have known Pa Davis. But this is homemade root beer, too. And homemade root beer is, well, it's a magnificence. So, there are, in point of fact, 2 gallons of fresh homemade root beer available for shipment, no less. And News Ninja Carol Baker is a goddess of packaging. I swear she could probably ship a disassembled spider web. She's that good. So if you would like to have one of these gallons of root beer, $75. So there's 2 gallons of root beer, $275 contributions. And the root beer goes hither or thither. You have to send me an email, and you have to specify it in the email. I want the root beer, and you have to give me a shipping address, which I will then transmit to News Ninja Carol Baker. And it will come to you direct from Hooterville. And I'm told that with vanilla ice cream added, and you know what? I'm an ice cream guy. I'm not put off by the idea of ice cream in the dead of winter. He said it makes an awesome black cow. Now, this may be one of those Midwestern versus Southern Appalachian things. I always thought that was a root beer float. But it could be. It's a black cow. In Iowa, it probably is. In Hooterville. The mark of good vanilla ice cream and good root beer is that when the root beer hits the cold ice cream, it foams like crazy, and it forms this beautiful crystalline surface around the ice cream. It's kind of like, it's almost like it bakes it in reverse or something. And, wow. So if there's good vanilla ice cream near where you are, or you want to churn your own up, whatever, put this root beer on it, we will have a fine, high old time. So there's 2 gallons out there. $75 gets you that as a premium. We're not selling it. It is a way of saying thank you to people who continue to keep this whole effort on the air. And I thank you very kindly, Carol, for putting that forward. Okay, so that's the housekeeping. I've been sitting around all weekend kind of, well, you know how it works. You shut things down on Friday, and then the weirdness starts piling up about 5 minutes after you go off air. And by Monday, Moran Monday is stacked to the ceilings with Morans. So with that being the case, yes, it's time. Mm-hmm. You know it is.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Straighten out that chair.
Imagine this. My chair is straight and all the other chairs are out of order. Now, here's a real mind bender for you, right?
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. It's Moran Monday on the horn right here on the Carnival Midway. You'll find Morans of all stripes, all shapes, all sizes, all varieties. We have Earther Morans, Deather Morans, Ninther Morans, Tenther Morans, Booger-Eating Morans, Virture Morans. Yes, indeed, Libertarian Morans, Republican Morans, Religious Morans, Morans of all imaginable type. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Just right here behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, you'll find every imaginable, horrifying, laugh-inducing, stunning form of Moran your imagination can conjure up. Without a doubt, you can't find such a gathering of Morans anywhere else in the internet-o-sphere. For less than 5 cents per hour of programming, you can experience the weirdness that is Moran Monday on the horn. You can't tell the Morans without a program. And this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans.
Special Academy Awards Edition.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We've got an abundance of them this evening. Bumper crop. I mean, holy mackerel. It is the Academy Awards edition of More End Monday. The Academy Awards happen every year on a Sunday. And lately, it seems that the Academy Awards, the Oscars have become somewhat of a symbiotic thing. Yes, 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 little right-wing weirdos. We'll wait while you go and look up symbiotic, you creepy little lurkers. But they sit around looking for things to be outraged by, and woo lordy, there was lots to be outraged by last night. Oh my Jesus, yes indeed. They were mad at Patricia Arquette. They were mad at Oprah. They were mad at Lady Gaga. They were mad at the director of Birdman. They were just mad. Because that's all they got. Yeah. Where to start? Well, let's see. They were also mad at Common and John Legend for being all uppity. Uppity is a very special word, you know. It is primarily used in the South to speak of persons of color who are appearing to forget their person of coloredness. Mm-hmm. So, without further adieu, or ado, actually, it's not adieu, it's ado, as in much ado about nothing. It's not adieu, as in French, farewell, bye-bye, whatever. It's ado. So, without further ado, let us check out our first Moran for the evening. Our first Moran for the evening is one of those local news anchors. This particular news anchor being at a Fox affiliate in Ohio Stan. Her name is Christy Capel, and she's the morning blather host of the Happy Talk morning program there on Fox 8. Not sure where. Somewhere in Ohio. Cleveland. Fox 8 News in the morning of WJW Cleveland. And she was not at all happy about Lady Gaga appearing at the Oscars last night. Whatever could we mean? Let's see. First hockey puck warning comes at 18 minutes past the hour, 18 minutes past 6 in the Eastern Standard Time Zone. This is a standard hockey puck warning. One simple trip around with the duct tape should be enough to secure it in, but you don't want to go without it. And here we go. Strap in. Aw, damn it! Well, it was working earlier. But lo and behold, apparently, somebody doesn't like for it to be heard or seen. Somebody being the parent, and this is fair use, you know. But all you got to do is whine to YouTube, and it gets removed. Let's see if it's also removed here. Nope.
Wow, Lady Gaga surprising a lot of people last night with this tribute to the Sound of Music. Afterwards, Julie Andrews joined her on stage, gave her a hug, and called it wonderful.
It was?
It's
wonderful.
Very impressive, wasn't it?
It's hard to really hear her voice.
Lady Gaga.
With all the jigaboo music that she does, whatever you want to call it, jigaboo.
Yeah, she has a nice voice.
She's a gorgeous voice. I never knew.
No, you heard that right, friends and neighbors. The audio is a little dodgy because it was recorded off of somebody's TV, the media company. whined to YouTube and got another version of it yanked. But there it is. Yeah. Now, I might point out that her co-host, Christy Capel, her co-host is a man by the name of Wayne Dawson, and Wayne Dawson is a man of color. And this is one of those moments when it actually would be fun for this to be a video broadcast so that you could see the sort of, no, really, you didn't just say that, look on his face when she said, what's that again? Yes, do tell. This deserves a twofer. Get an extra bite, just so we can get an extra bite of the hockey puck, if nothing else.
She was joined on stage, gave her a hug, and called it wonderful.
It's
very impressive, though, isn't it?
It's hard to really hear her voice.
Lady Gaga.
With all the jigaboo music that she does, whatever you want to call it. Jigaboo.
Yeah,
jigaboo. Jigaboo. What do you say? I mean, that's just darling, isn't it? We're definitely in a post-racial America when you can use that word in conversation with your African-American co-host. And she's so perky. Jigaboo. I don't know how old Christy Capel is. I'm thinking 12 and a half. Because when she got called on it, and Lord Jesus, yes, she did get called on it, she said, I apologize if I offended you. There's one of those non-apology apologies. I had no idea it was a word or what it meant. Thank you for watching. I apologize if I offended you. Oh, she's going to go far. She's going to go far in the Fox broadcast universe. I apologize if I offended you. Not I apologize for my offensive words. I apologize if I offended you. I mean, if I didn't offend you, I don't apologize. If you just kind of laughed when I said... But to be fair, there is an argument that Christy Capel was not lying in saying that she didn't know what it meant. Because this marks the first time I have ever heard orchestral show tunes arrangements referred to in such fashion. Although you gotta wonder if it would, you know that old saying about infinite monkeys and infinite typewriters? And you really have to mathematically think about this to get your head all the way around it, but there's an old saying that says, if infinite monkeys have infinite typewriters, one of them is going to write Hamlet. And upon consideration, it's true, I think, not being a mathematician. But it has to be infinite in order for the randomness that would need to be in play to work out. I guess the theory being that the more random you... I mean, there's sort of a... There's an outer... You know, in the furthest reaches of infinity, which is kind of a contradiction in terms in the first place, I admit, that the laws of probability will kick in and boom, you know, Hamlet. So I guess this is a case of that. The sort of electrified protein stew that is Christy Capel's brain just came up with that word. Never having heard it before, never knowing it in its noxious, obnoxious, racist context, it just bubbled up from her, what, amygdala? And apparently, she is such a talking head and what I mean by that, a lot of times the talent has no idea how the magic works that makes the rest of the broadcast thingy go. Doesn't understand the magic. Because I'll say this much, and yes, via the magic of the interweb tubes, I too, and I confess my shallowness, I watched the Oscars. But I feel comfortable because, among others, I know by virtue of what was going on Twitter, I know that our dear friend Sandra watched the Oscars together, and we were back and forth, and so, you know, more shallow. But in watching it, I did notice something. I thought, and I don't think it's because she started out singing so far upstage, because this was all very much mic'd, and in fact she had a mic in her hand, I thought she had a rather poor mix. I don't know if she had bad monitoring. Everybody up there who was singing had in-ear monitors. I mean, it's the currency now. There's no more wedge monitors out there. And they're really neat, in-ear monitoring is. But I thought she had a crummy mix. But Christy Capel apparently knows nothing except how to sit in front of the camera and read words and hopefully be visually appealing. So she lacked the technological understanding to say, I thought the sound guys had her mic too low, or I thought that the orchestra was drowning her out. Instead, no, by God, no. Instead of saying anything smart and technical like that, she gets all perky.
It's very impressive, though.
It's hard to really hear her voice.
Lady Gaga.
With all the jigaboo music that she does, whatever you want to call it, jigaboo.
Yeah, did you hear the ha, 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 yeah, that her host, yeah.
She's a gorgeous voice. I never knew. Very nice. All right, 6:22 this morning. Let's check in with Patty. There's some problems upstairs.
Yeah, meanwhile, Wayne Dawson is still just kind of gobsmacked. Shit, how am I going to... Oh, my word. Who put this woman on the set with me? Because it's pretty obvious that he's got some experience. He's got some years. He's been in front of a camera before. And yes, Ron and Raleigh. Subject line. Jigaboo? Really? Here we are in post-racial America and some cracker dredges up jigaboo? Where the hell did she even hear that word? I haven't heard it in 25 or 30 years. Well, that's the thing, Ron. She claims she's never heard the word before in her life. It's just one of those unfortunate incidents. My God, I hope she went out and bought a lottery ticket with odds like that. Under the subject line, just a jigaboo. So Michael in Madison writes, so this woman doesn't know the meaning of the word jigaboo or the word apologize. Got it. I apologize if you were offended. Why didn't she just tweet out, well, some bitch, I learned a new word today. Ain't gonna use that no more. Marty pointing out, I did not watch the Oscars. I haven't since Amadeus won and the Killing Fields Best Picture Oscar. Thank goodness for the live blog on IMDb. Now, to be fair, that is a moment that did not get the right wing all in a lather. I'm sure they're probably trying to get her hired on over at the home office of Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, even as we speak. because she was probably speaking truth to power. But yes, yes, the right wing did get rather chap-assed about what went on. Like I said, over there at the Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, Jesse Waters, and didn't he attack Dog for I was there at the Battle of Waterloo, Bill O'Reilly. I was with the Beatles on the rooftop, Bill O'Reilly. I was in the Falkland Islands, Bill O'Reilly. More on that later. Moron, see? See how? Oh, I am a witty one. Oh, Jesse Waters is pissed off at John Legend because of what John Legend said in his Oscar speech for winning Best Song for Glory from Selma. There was a whole segment on that program Outnumbered that has four women and one guy, including including Andrea Eric Holder runs the Department of Justice like the Black Panther's tarantula, or Tantaros. Oh, screw it. Let's go to the audio.
Let's talk Oscars. Many of the winners and presenters last night turned the stage into a political soapbox. Did you see it? They were sharing some of their liberal messages. Watch.
Tonight we honor Hollywood's best and whitest, sorry, brightest.
To every woman who gave birth to every...
Now, dadgummit. We'll get it back in a minute. No, Neil Patrick Harris's Hollywood's best and whitest was a glib response, and I don't think it was off the cuff either, to something that's been pointed out ever since the nominations came out, namely that not one single actor, male or female, nominated for either best actor, best actress, best supporting actor, female, none of them were, and it was Oscars so white. And so if anybody says anything, now understand, Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, you know, if let's say the story of that vulgar coward, Chris Kyle, let's say that had swept the Academy Awards and everybody had run up to the stage and given a pay on to warfare and bloodshed and shooting people in the back and shoot him in the back, Gomez, shoot him in the back, that kind of stuff, they would not have complained that the Oscars were turned into a political soapbox. But let somebody say something about civil rights. Let somebody say something about equal pay for women. Let somebody say something about the way immigrants are treated in the United States and, whoo, dude, Jesus, Gil Harris, we're going to have us a problem on Fox.
Let's talk Oscars. Many of the winners and presenters last night turned the stage into a political soapbox. Did you see it? They were sharing some of their liberal messages. Watch.
Tonight we honor Hollywood's best and whitest, sorry, brightest.
To every woman who gave birth, to every taxpayer and citizen of this nation, it's our time to have wage equality once and for all, and equal rights for women in the United States of America.
We wrote this song for a film that was based on events that were 50 years ago, but we say that Selma is now because the struggle for justice is right now.
The disclosures that Edward Snowden revealed don't only expose a threat to our privacy, but to our democracy itself.
The Oscar goes to Who gave this son of a his green card? Birdman.
Maybe next year the government will inflict some immigration rules to the academy. Two Mexicans in a row, that's suspicious, I guess.
Wow. It was bizarre to say. I never thought I'd see Meryl Streep do a whoop-whoop. Anyway, meanwhile, despite American Sniper's success at the box office, some $400 million, more than all the other movies that were nominated combined.
You knew that would be the butt hurt, didn't you? American Sniper's the best, most patriotic, God-fearing, upstanding, patriotic, America-loving movie ever made. How come they didn't just give everything to American Sniper? You could see it coming from a mile away, couldn't you? Yeah.
It was largely snubbed last night. The film that...
It wasn't snubbed. It just wasn't as good, according to the voters, as the other films. I mean, it won an Oscar for it got its midget league participation trophy, best sound editing for bullets hitting human flesh or something like that. Oh dear, you hear those? Don't hear those a lot. Whole bunch of sirens going on outside. Something must be on fire. This is that time of year, unfortunately. Had a big-ass explosion here last night. I was wondering if another one of the tank cars went up down the river. More on that later, maybe. Wasn't able to find out. But that's what it is. They're all butthurt because nobody got to go up there and talk about a hero Chris Kyle was for shooting people in the back. But by the time Best Picture was announced, I thought it was pretty clear. You know, not the actors, but the roles involved. You had Alan Turing, a genuine, bona fide world hero for his role in the creation of the Enigma machine and in large part in the creation of the idea of computers, who very well may have helped end the war. Did, not may, there's no may very well about it, helped end the war. And was later hounded to death for his sexuality by a grateful United Kingdom. Hero. You had Stephen Hawking. From The Theory of Everything. Stephen Hawking, who has done as much or more than Einstein and Isaac Newton to explain to us the nature of the physical universe in which we live, you know, not the one with the leprechauns and the unicorns and the zombie gods in it, the real universe. You had the fictional portrayal of a woman over a 12-year span, trying to pull her family together, Patricia Arquette, in A Boy's Life. And you had, of course, Dr. King, who transformed a nation that is still struggling to transform while some are trying to put all that back in the bottle. Thanks, John Roberts. Those are heroes. I sat there thinking, if you know that every day of your life is a life that probably is a day that probably someone would like to shoot you and kill you and remove you from this reality and this planet, and you still go about your business and you still do your work and you still continue to climb the mountain and you yet continue to inspire others, and you reach out and you talk about the change that this country must have if it is to survive, and you then find the courage to simply walk out of your motel room door onto the balcony of the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, Tennessee, where the bullet finally finds you, that is courage. That is heroism. Chris Kyle bragging about the number of people he murdered in cold blood is not heroism. And I commend to you an article originally appearing at Alternet, reprinted over the weekend at Salon, that compares the difference between masculinity and machismo with Chris Kyle, an American sniper, being an example of machismo, which is a brutal, violent, overly over-the-top kind of maleness as it's defined in the Spanish idiom of Mexico. And masculinity, which is the guts to just be a man. And that is, and I'm not trying to be sexist in this regard, but that's the difference, you know. And the article at Salon sets it out, and Alternet sets it out much more clearly, and I do recommend you read it. But that's what it boiled down to. The people at Fox were pissed off that the Academy voters, wow, more sirens, that the voters at the Academy didn't give the whole shooting match, pun intended, I guess, to Clint Eastwood and who played Chris Kyle? I can't remember. And that celebration of blood and death and paranoia and horror and PTSD and sorry endings.
Kyle, despite American Sniper's success at the box office, some $400 million, more than all the other movies that were nominated combined, it was largely snubbed last night. The film that
and let's point out something. Since when is the amount of money made at the box office the metric for who wins an Academy Award? Hint, it's mostly not. If it was, Guardians of the Galaxy would have walked away with everything, wouldn't it? Kind of pissed off that Groot didn't win that one where he was nominated. Become a bit of a Groot fan over time. See, that now that there's heroism. Not going to spoil anything, but Groot's a hero. Yeah. We are Groot.
The real-life story of sniper Chris Kyle was up for 6 Oscars, but took home only one for Best Sound Editing. Jesse?
Yes.
Very interesting. I think that montage, if we had let it all play out, we'd still be sitting here.
I know. It was a lot of politics last night. A few things on Patricia Arquette. I don't think it's very brave to get up there on the soapbox and talk about wage equality when your dress costs $3,000 and you work about 2 months out of the year. I also think it would have been a little braver for her to talk about maybe women being enslaved by ISIS if she really wants to take a stand. On John Legend's talk, I think he talked about voter ID and discrimination. Just want to fact check there. A lot of the states that passed voter ID laws, black voter participation's actually gone up. So I don't even think that's true. And then,
wait, it has? Oh, well, obviously, what Jesse Waters is trying to get at is that maybe by extension, if we just said black folks can't vote, well, they'd probably vote a lot more even then. Damn fool.
On Snowden here. So they like it when Snowden steals the emails from the U.S. government, but they don't like it when they steal Sony's emails. I mean, which way is it, guys?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of, so,
even though there's really not a real comparison there. Oh, well, between the Sony hack and what Edward Snowden did. And by the way, Neil Patrick Harris did have a snide little comment after the Glenn Greenwald and Laura Poitras and the rest of them went up and accepted their Academy Award for Citizen Four. When they cut back to Neil Patrick Harris, he said Edward Snowden was unable to be here this evening for some treason. Didn't sit well with me. Not at all. And everybody laughed and chuckled. Some treason. Oh, what, how risable is an allegation of treason? Oddly enough, that didn't somehow make it into the Fox outrage machine, though, did it? No.
See, I have to come to you on this, because I can't even imagine what it's like for a conservative inside Hollywood. Can you imagine getting up there? First of all, you should have an Oscar right now.
Thank you.
Right now. But come on. So you get up there, and what if you drop the mic on your conservative values? What do you think that audience would
do? Oh, my gosh. I mean, all hell would have broken loose. That's what would happen. But this is liberal Hollywood. This is what they do. And I'm sorry, I missed the memo on my not having any rights. So why don't, I know, the actresses that make $10 million a film, why don't they give the money to SAG and then they can redistribute it to the women who don't get
the
money?
That's a great idea.
And that's parallel to something I heard last week. Do you drive a car? Quit driving a car! Atne ute aitbre, these right-wingers, if you own what I eat, may. Underneath all this is, I think, what? A sense of, they feel betrayed. It drives the right wing nuts when wealthy people don't stand with them, when wealthy people have a conscience. And that's what that's about.
Let's join back tomorrow.
I am a member, and they don't pay me anything. I'm very upset about it. Patricia Arquette, show me the money. Where's my, you know, I'm working, aren't I? Yeah, I don't know. This is just, it was so disappointing.
That's Kimberly Guilfoyle. Okay. Who apparently is in some sort of indentured servitude arrangement with Fox, from what she says. Sheesh. Well, we call it Moran Monday for a reason.
Pointing because it just reeks of that whole, like, white privilege thing. You know, everything.
That white privilege thing.
It's just like punishing, nothing celebrating all the successes and advancements we have in this country. And I agree with you, Jessica. Why don't you talk about ISIS and Sharia law that's condoning genital mutilation and disfigurement of women, and women don't even any of the rights that they have in this country. Why can't we hold ourselves up to be the shining example and then reach out so that America isn't the only place that everybody wants to come? Like,
so I guess there's just not enough people out there talking about ISIS. Well said, Jeremy. Jeremy in Vermont noting. So, what it boils down to is these right-wing knuckle-dragging assholes are the Kanye West of the Oscars. Pretty much. Carol. They's bitching about white people problems. Meanwhile, as far as Christy Capel's non-apology, if you're so thin-skinned that I can't utter a racial slur without you getting your knickers in a knot, there's something wrong with you! See how it works? Exactly. John Legend getting all uppity and talking about people being able to vote. John Legend can vote, can't he? Ain't that enough? Yeah. It's just precious, I tell you. Jim, with a question going back to Chris Kyle, and I think it's a fair question. Serious question, Jim says. Regarding the death of Chris Kyle. Why did those snipers killed at a shooting range take a sick guy to a shooting range for therapy? I do not understand, Jim says. from my own experience. And I think from the experience and understanding or just common empathy of many people, Jim, no one understands. Unless, of course, you are willing to deal with some of the other things that are in Chris Kyle's book. For instance, claiming that during Hurricane Katrina, he went and took up a sniper position on top of the Superdome, where he then proceeded to begin murdering people. Or that somewhere out in the wastes of Texas, he shot somebody who was holding someone up or doing some sort of evildoer stuff at a gas station. This is all in his book. And then there's the lie about beating the snot out of Jesse Ventura, for which Jesse Ventura has obtained a nearly $2 million judgment. So every time a ticket's bought, a little hunk of that belongs to Jesse Ventura. But in this deeply dysfunctional country, in our crumbling empire, firearms have obtained such mythic status, such totemic, fetishistic status, but it does not defy my comprehension, Jim, to imagine people saying, what? You're down in the dumps. You know what you need to do. And in times past, in a saner, not sane, but saner America, that would be, you know what we need to do? Need to go for a nice long walk in the woods. Need to go fishing. Or let's go for a nice long drive in the country. Or hey, let's go over to my buddy's place and you know we'll feed the horses and slop the pigs and you know get back to the basics. Right? But in 21st century America, if you've got a problem, you know what you need to do, buddy? We need to get you to the gun range. Get you out there where you can really appreciate some Second Amendment freedom. Because Second Amendment freedom will help clear up a lot of your problems. We'll just put a few rounds through, and you'll be as good as new right after that. Right? Now, I know to say that sounds more than a whole bunch of crazy. But it's real. It's true. Consider Mother Lanza. Mother Lanza had a deeply disturbed son, and she took him to the range to help him work out some of his aggressions. What she wound up doing was making him a very highly efficient user of high-capacity, semi-automatic assault rifles, which, as we all know, he then used to deadly effect at the Sandy Hook Elementary School. So if that's any kind of an answer at all, and I don't know if it is, well, it makes sense to me, I guess. Jim, you can tell me if it makes any sense to you. We are not done by any stretch of the imagination with the weirdos. Oh no, we got lots and lots of more ends, and I don't have any more stomach for the Andrea Tarantula and her buddies there. And it's not all Oscar Morans. Yeah, no, we got a Wisconsin governating Moran. We got an Idaho Stan Moran. We got Morans everywhere, and none of them to think. Meanwhile, our buddy Jason says, with regard to that word that Christy Capel used in Cleveland, I have not heard that since high school back in Alabama. I can say the same. It's not one much in currency. But just play armchair psychiatrist and think for a minute what it must take to bury a word like that far in the subconscious of Christy Capel so that she doesn't know she's ever even heard it. And it just sort of comes tumbling and bumbling out. Yeah. All right. A gentle reminder, we are trying to raise $150 this evening. So far, we are at zero, and we have a premium on the table, courtesy of News Ninja Carol Baker in Hooterville. For a $75 contribution, a gallon of homemade, wonderful root beer will be winging its way to you. And there are two of those available, she tells me. The PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. And, of course, if you prefer to help out via the U.S. Postal Service, and thank you to Irish Dave and Faith and Tom. They participate that way. Thank you very, very kindly. Well, the address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. And with that, yes, we'll take a little break. The lines are, of course, open. You know the numbers, right? For everyone but right-wingers, they're not allowed. 304-574-8178. We call that the Skype line because it comes in on the computer where the Skype is. 304-574-8178. You don't have to have Skype. That's just what we call it. And then there's the Gizmo line, which is 304-663-HORN. 304-663-4676. Skype to Skype is Bob Kincaid Horn. If you've never done that before, send me a contact request and we will be off and running. It all works equally well, all affords you an equal opportunity to get into the conversation. This is Conversation Radio, listener-supported. This is The Horn.
The only two things in life that make it worth living is guitars are too good and firm-feeling women. I don't need my name in the marquee lights. I got my song, and I got you with me tonight. Maybe it's time we got back to the basics of love. Let's go to Lukenbach, Texas, Waylon and Willie and the boys. This successful life we're living got us feuding like the Hatfields and McCoys. Between Hank Williams' pain songs, Newberry's train songs, and blue eyes crying in the rain. Out in Lukenbach, Texas, ain't nobody feeling no pain. I
Baby, let's sell your diamond ring, buy some boots and faded jeans and go away. This coat and tie is choking me, and in your high society you cry all day. We've been so busy keeping up with the Joneses, four car garage, and we're still building up. Maybe it's time we got back to the basics of love. Let's go to Luke and Buck, Texas, Waylon and Willie and the boys. This successful life we're living got us feuding like the Hatfields and McCoys. Between Hank Williams' pain songs, Newberry's train songs, and Blue Eyes crying in the rain, out in Luke and Buck, Texas, ain't nobody feeling no pain. Let's go to Luke and Buck, Texas, Willie and Waylon and boy. This successful life we're living's got us feuding like the Hatfields and the Coys. Between the Hank Williams pain songs, Jerry Jeff train songs, and Blue Eyes crying in the rain, out in Luke and Bob, Texas, there ain't nobody feeling no pain.
Yeah, back to the basics. This is the Horn, Moran Monday, the 23rd day of February 2015, and let's run over to the Gizmo line, where I think we got Bill. Hey, Bill.
You sure do. How are you?
Pretty good. Yourself?
I'll survive. I'm down about something, but I'll talk to you when I get to the end of my, man, are you on the ball with the, Ms. Arquette, her grandfather was a comedian named Cliff Arquette. Who used to go on the power show dressed in old men's looking dudes and called himself Charlie Weaver. You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, before you... Because he had a little museum in Gettysburg where he did hand carvings of the soldiers on both sides. You know, I think he carved them himself. And I've been in there once for sure, and because I liked his work as a comedian, you know. He's the Mothers for Mama were always funny.
Well, he I remember as a kid, Hollywood Squares, right?
Mm-hmm.
With the hat.
Yep.
Charlie Weaver, yeah.
Yeah, he was those old time comics got a piece of me, and they'll never let it go, you know. And I told you, I've seen Carlin, and I've seen what the hell is his name? The really funny, he was always screwing up something. He's the guy that got mugged, but the mugger had flash because he used an electric razor. But he blamed himself for it because he said, I should have known when I read the ad for the apartment when it said short run to the bus. Well, you know who it was, of course. I'm getting senile, you know. I'm taking the Egyptian trip here. Memory fails
no,
me sometimes.
No, you know what? Anybody who says I'm getting senile, I'm taking the Egyptian trip, is still pretty okay, I think, Bill.
Yeah, I know. I'm just kidding, but this guy is so famous as a comic. He's a guy whose wife died, and he went and sold aluminum siding. And until his kids grew up.
Oh, what, Dangerfield? Rodney?
Yes, Rodney. Yeah, I saw him. But I still say the guy that machine gunned me the best was the king of the one-liners.
Annie?
Again, the name is bothering me.
Annie?
So, but getting back, I'm not a big, big Oscar fan. My sister was, and it's the only person I miss, but, lost her to ovarian cancer when she was 35, and I was 32, and I had to handle all the, crap. That's one of the funniest times when I was in, looking at those caskets from the entrepreneur who, Digger Odell, the friendly undertaker, was trying to sell me these coffins. My one buddy asked if he had one with automatic transmission, and I said, you have one with backup lights. There's two project boys. We nailed them, you know. Although my friend is a real conservative person. But his father was a labor organizer who was physically assaulted and killed by the union busters in the 1940s. So much for that story. Yeah, so Oscars and me, these people are ridiculous. This Sniper movie, how much did it really have, Bob?
I guess this marks me out as a little bit of a jerk, but I haven't seen the thing. Now, I've seen reasonable liberals say, you know, you need to see this movie. It's not just about him sniping at people. But I can't stand the idea of putting money in the pockets of profiting by this. Because, I mean, it's not, you know, imagine that. Clint Eastwood left out the part where he was murdering people from the top of the Superdome. Gee, Clint, why did you leave that out? Oh, because it was obviously a lie from a guy who was pretty clearly gone round the bend by the time he sat down to put pen to paper.
I mean, what were they trying to prove with this movie?
It's not two unrelieved hours of him shooting children in the back. He just does that a little bit.
Yep.
But, I mean, you see him going through the pain and problems of coming home, and to an extent, it's about the disconnect of PTSD and the difficulty acclimating to civilian life after you've participated in an illegal war that probably should have gotten the people who started it a free trip to The Hague to stand in the dock and be judged.
That, we've all read War is a Racket.
I think so,
yeah. We know what that man wrote. And that's when I began to, you know, Bob, at one point in my life, I wanted to become a professional soldier. The Second World War propaganda that was washing over me, and then most Americans never knew that the American folks who were shipped from Japan to Korea, they took a beating. The North Koreans were very good at what they did, and the T-34 Russian-built tank was superior to the 2.3-inch bazooka. And Americans were running, Bob, literally. Not because they're cowards, but because they were just out everything in the opening days of that war. And I still support the United Nations, because most Americans don't know that the flag these guys were fighting under was the UN flag that they was flying. Because they had, the big bitch against the League of Nations was they never stepped up and said anything to Hitler, Mussolini, and Japan when Japan was occupying Manchuria, which was Chinese. And Chiang Kai-shek was a con artist. His wife's brothers were active in money markets.
Well, we do a lot of business with con artists. I mean, I still remember the story from our invasion and attack on the innocent people of Iraq about how there were shrink wrapped bales. I guess maybe you'd call them bricks. Shrink-wrapped bricks of $100 bills that were shipped over to the Coalition Provisional Authority. And the guys on the airfield in Baghdad called them footballs because they threw them around and played with them as such. I mean, we sent God knows how many millions, if not tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars in cash to Iraq to just sort of be scattered around. And oddly enough, I think some of it came up missing. Who'd have thunk? And we were trying to buy the loyalty of people who hated our guts.
Well, you say Dick Cheney to me, and I visualize some guy laying in an alley getting an impromptu heart surgery after somebody killed him and shipping the heart over to a creep, or other people wait in line for any kind of transplants. And hell, a buddy of mine was dating a woman, and he was like the best friend she ever had in the world. She had lung implants. I didn't know they were even doing that stuff. I could use a new set myself, you know, but that's another story. So it's just, going after something like, to me, the Academy Awards have become so much of a show that, there are things people don't know about the movie. There's a book I'll recommend to anybody. It's called A World of Their Own. And it was dedicated to studying the men who founded the movie business. The men were mostly Jewish men.
Yeah.
And how the
Louis B. Mayer, Samuel Goldwyn.
Pardon?
Louis B. Mayer, Samuel Goldwyn, that bunch?
Yeah. And they started with nothing. I mean, they took a big chance on something that nobody, and of course, what is it, the one movie that was so racist in nature,
Birth of a Nation.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, that passed its, 100th anniversary just a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, but to get back to Channel 8, I was on that network with that little show about a year ago, playing with a band in between, you know, the breaks. They'd come back in and we'd be playing something, and they'd let it run for so long, and then they'd signal you to stop, you know. So people who are doing this, trying to do this album with me, they have found out in the minds of me of jobs that I did that I didn't even remember anymore, Bob. Because, you know, you go back 25 years to some little job opening somewhere. I said, the one I'll never forget is doing two shows with, you know, when I say shows, I mean they turned the house between the sets.
Right.
And we were working with Bonnie Raitt, and what a spectacular person she was to work with. And Minnie Riperton with the Rotary Connection down at Bowling Green, where they moved the steps, and I went to introduce my guitar player doing Lonnie Mack in Memphis, and I stepped off the stage and just disappeared. You know, here he goes, Billy Coyote, you know, just off the, you know, and fell about five and 6 feet to the floor and landed on my fat back. And at least I got up afterwards, you know. But anyway, I'll let you go, because I'm not sure you're going to get a lot of calls tonight, but yeah, these people, you cannot have a Sunday school picnic without that.
Without right-wingers getting all offended?
Yeah, because they're Fox Network.
Yeah.
And,
How long is it? There. Well, I mean, you know your ethnic slurs. How long has it been since you heard that word, Bill?
Oh, jeez. Well, that's another thing I will bring up before I get off. Yeah, I haven't heard that word in so long. It was like, what was she thinking?
Well, I mean, let's just put it plain and simple. Do you believe she had no idea what the word meant? I mean, if that's the case, unless she's, you know, 13 and a half, she's an idiot.
Exactly. I can't believe it. I've heard that. Well, you know, you and I can sit here and go up and down the line of ethnic slurs. I mean, let's face it, you're talking to a crowdhead, squarehead. In the Civil War here, the Germans were called Dutchmen. Because
Deutsch.
They were Deutschmen.
Yeah.
And the people that were hearing him, and we talk about these epidemic things. There was an epidemic of chickenpox that wiped men out by the hundreds. When they were in Civil War camp, when they came into camp to train, you know? Because people who had not been farther than 20 miles from home had never been exposed to that stuff. So it just, it goes on and on, you know? I still have the marks of the original, the inoculation against smallpox. And I took the inoculations, the Salk and the Sabin vaccine when I was 15, 16 years old. My mother was insistent that we get it, no matter how old we were, because that can catch you at any time.
Sure.
When did it catch FDR? He was not a young man when that happened.
No, he wasn't. He'd been swimming in a lake and fell ill, and I mean, he was a grown man.
Anybody want to Google up something that will turn their stomach, find a picture of somebody in an iron lung.
Yeah.
Saw that plenty, you know. I just got a call earlier, and I just heard the message, and it could be one of my granddaughters has found me, which is my birth granddaughter, but at my daughter's funeral, I was talking to the man who adopted her, and we stood there and held hands like lovers. The two of us. It was must have been 20 minutes we conversed. Because he told me, he said, well, Bill, I knew that you wanted to get married, but the woman didn't. I said, yeah, well, that's the way things go. I was so in love with music that I don't know how good a husband and father I would have been. But the first time I had those grandkids out to my house, one was 6 and the other was 2. And I didn't know what to do, you know. It's like, this is amazing. You know, what if you would meet your grandchildren at that age? Because I know you have several.
Yeah.
But I'm just going to make an appeal to my buddy from Southie here. To give me a call. Let's talk. Maybe he thinks I want him to come in and work on my computer. Hell no. Not the way the weather is, but my old one. It's still cranking. My problem was when I moved in here, I had 2 XP computers, and the guys that moved it screwed it up. Because this, I mean, Bob, I was assembling computers when I was, 2001. I was assembling the things for a friend of mine, but he was doing the configuration, my buddy. He never taught me to do that. But now I'm dealing from the bottom of my own deck. Because of my vision, I struggle with stuff. But and I'm not too happy because if something needed fixing in my youth, I would fix it because that's what we were taught to do. And that sounds like your father, probably.
Yep. Well, you know, make do.
That was what we called the American way. Struggle, save some money. Like I tell people, laying out in 10-degree weather to install a new shaft for the distributor because it wasn't turning anymore. And while you're in there, once you drop the oil pan, you might as well change the pump, too. Just the way it goes. And then luckily for me, my first wife's brother, who was a great guy, he went to Diesel Tech, so... He went there on the advice of his brother-in-law to go out and get an education that, pays money. So he said, maybe work in a gas station. I said, come on. You go in there and do that work, you'll be there for the rest of your life. I mean, I sounded like a counselor. But that's what they told me, too, Bob, that they told me I should never work with mechanical things because I couldn't put washers on pegs fast enough. But that's, it's the fast part is all about if you're working for somebody as a mechanic. If you're out there saving yourself $100, it's a different story, But anyway, Well, I just talked to my buddy. That please give me a call. I love to talk to you because I'm not asking. I'm not calling you to come down here and do anything. Not in this weather, buddy. He's done enough. I just realized that he did install Skype for me, but I'm having trouble setting it up and getting it going. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully something will happen in short order.
Well, the other thing being that they say I got a call from a man from up around the capital of Canada, and I hope to see him when he passes through here to visit relatives, because he's a hell of a good guy. And
yes, he is.
I'm fixated with Canada anyway, because I've been fixated with hockey since the 16 days when we had minor league hockey here in Cleveland, where I went and Cleveland Crusaders and the World Hockey Association, Jesus, I saw Gordie Howe play, a legend on skates, you know, and Gordie's had a little stroke trouble in recent years, but he's 86, you know, and the Hockey Hall of Fame, I've been there twice in Toronto. If I had my way, I would have moved to Toronto, but my first wife didn't like the idea, and you know, there's times you give in to, when you come to a point where one cannot give in to the other, then you better go see her. It's like this sick rhyme I've come up with and thought about this. Gay marriage is a wonderful thing for divorce lawyers. And if it's legal.
Right.
And you got to get away from it, which I'm sorry happens to people. And it happens to people regardless of what, you know, what situation they're in. You start arguments, you know, a married couple can start an argument. Oh, it's raining out there. No, it isn't. That's how you do. What do you mean? Here we go, you know. If you don't argue about something when you're involved in a relationship, then I wish we didn't. You know, I wish we could. Come on, Bob, I don't want to dump some thing of water from a vaporizing, and there I am laying on the electric blanket. Shocking, isn't it? Anyhow, you take care of yourself.
All right, you have a good evening, Bill. Stay warm.
Thank you.
All right, take care. Bye now. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, the legendary bluesman calling from Cleveland, and far more than a musician, a man of much knowledge. Kelly in the chat room said, I learned so much from Bill, as do we all. It is 23 minutes past the hour, still looking for our first little bump on the evening's fundraising goal of $150. Note coming in here, subject line, Kansas Stan Highway. Traveling down Highway 75 North in Kansas Stan tonight, and stopped for a moment to write this. I have your program on my iPad TuneIn app connected to my radio speakers. Life is good. Signed, You Know Who, in You Know Where. And I would add parenthetically, and always marvelously coherent. Yes. Yeah, I was a little unclear talking about Alan Turing. Turing didn't invent the Enigma machine. He devised the way to break the Enigma code, which helped win the war, for which, to say thanks, he was hounded to death over his sexuality. Yes. Thank you for clearing that up, Marty. So it is more in Monday. And, well, you gotta. This is restaurant quality, Moran. This is, well, how in the world how to put this? As a male, how much understanding via, say, health class or biology or the various other educational formats, not to mention the sort of word on the street, word of mouth kind of. How long does it take to come up with a functioning understanding of female anatomy? Because even as far back as when I was a kid, you know, there were diagrams, and of course they weren't at all prurient. They were just line drawings, and they showed the reproductive system of the guy, the reproductive system of the female. And yet, well, it seems fairly self-explanatory. Well, enter representing Vito Barbieri up in Idaho Stan, where they were having a hearing on yet another right-wing pig-licking bill relating to women's reproductive rights. Because that's the main purpose of being a Republican, is to sit around spending most of your time worrying about women's reproductive organs. The House State Affairs Committee took 3 hours of testimony today regarding a bill that would ban physicians, licensed, certified, regulated, from being able to prescribe abortifacient medications through what is described by the Associated Press as telemedicine. And I guess telemedicine means using the using the miracle of the interweb tubes to perhaps deliver medical care of some at some level to women who might otherwise find it difficult to reach the doctor's office. Kind of guessing there, but probably reasonably close. Now, Dr. Julie Madsen was testifying before the committee in opposition to this physician ban, in which the Republicans, who, remember, are the party of small, limited government and freedom, right, want to curtail the freedom of doctors to practice, what did Dim Leader call it? Their love of women. Mm-hmm. You remember that, don't you? Sure. Who could forget? Okay, Texas Betsy pointing out my doc has been known to prescribe meds based on phone conversation. That's not sure. I don't necessarily know that that's a terrible thing. Can't always get to the doctor, right? So Dr. Julie Madsen is testifying. God, I'd pay anything. I'd pay for audio of this, but I don't know if it was probably drowned out by the guffawing. Dr. Julie Madsen was testifying in opposition to the bill, Telemedicine is apparently, according to Think Progress, an emerging technology that allows a doctor to remotely prescribe the abortion pill over a video chat. And it makes reproductive health care more available, especially to women of limited financial means, so that she won't have to drive 500 miles to the nearest clinic that provides women's reproductive health care. 16 states, according to Think Progress, have already passed telemedicine abortion bans. According to Think Progress, this process was originated by Planned Parenthood clinics in Iowa. Now, let's remember that the abortion pill is actually better than a surgical abortion because it can be done earlier in the process and is less invasive and therefore safer for the patient. They are also dramatically less expensive. Again, and this is something that Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg pointed out, women of wealth and means will never have a hard time dealing with a problem pregnancy. They can always fly off to, if you're rich in Mississippi, you just put a little precious lumpkin on a jet to California and everything's all right. But not so for a woman who's working 3 minimum wage jobs just to keep her children fed, you know, the ones that she already has. So, again, enter right-wing, repig-licking moron representing Vito Barbieri. Proud, proud, proud member of the Idaho House of Representatives. Now, it should come as no surprise that Vito Barbieri is not a native Idahostanian. He was actually born in 1951 in Bexar County, Texas. I love Wikipedia because this story that I'm telling you about right now has already become an entry at Wikipedia. I guess he's from the Boise area, Vito is. And he's got that sort of vacant, ignorant smile that just screams teabagger. But never mind. So Dr. Julie Madsen is testifying in opposition to this telemedicine ban. When Vito Barbieri, seeking to clarify and perhaps determine a better way to go about things, you know, because he's a man. He inquired of Dr. Madsen, oh, God, really, bite down real good on the hockey puck, maybe kind of turn it around in your mouth in case you got it. Get a fresh hunk of it there, and just take another trip around with the duct tape so you don't rouse the neighbors. I can't believe this is real. But I want this so badly to be The Onion, but it isn't. And we know that this kind of stupid is legion inside Teabaggerville. Whoop! This guy actually put a question to Dr. Julie Madsen as to whether a woman could swallow a pill camera that would then enable the doctor to perform a remote gynecological exam. There. I said it. Granted, I want to just stick the swirly straw in the fruit jar and just go ahead and kill whatever brain cell that's on now, but I said it because Vito Barbieri said it. Now, let's be fair. There is such a thing as a pill cam. They're kind of handy. They operate on RFID or something, and it's about the size of a pill, and you swallow it. And they can watch the pill make its progress down your gullet, into your stomach, past the jejunum or whatever, into the small intestine, go looping around, loopity 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 loopity, curly curly curvy curvy, through the miles and miles and miles of human small intestine, and then boom, into the colon, and the next thing you know, it's like, I don't know, it's like watching a splashdown from inside the command module of an Apollo spacecraft landing in the water. Only it's not an ocean. Those things exist. But this... And this is why I was laughing about the Wikipedia entry, because it said something along the lines of, it is believed that Representative Barbieri has never taken a biology class in his life. But without putting too fine a point on it, at no point in the human digestive tract is there ever an intersection with the female, or for that matter, there's no intersection with the female reproductive system. Now, okay, so if you're a guy, I mean, I guess you could make a little bit of an argument to say that, you know, because the urethra in the male carries both urine and sperm, that there is a connection at least there in terms of the liquid waste elimination. But no, not really. I mean, no. But an actual sitting, constitutionally sworn member of a legislature, of a state, of this union, thinks that, I don't know, the colon is connected to the fallopian tubes? Or that pill cams are little RC drone that, what, is it Fantastic Voyage? Is that what we're talking about here? Are we gonna shrink up Vito Barbieri into a little tiny pill cam so he can go and personally inspect all the little telemedicine, the blastocysts? The brain bone's connected to the teabagger bone. What? Oh, Lottie, you're just awful. Maybe a vibrating pill cam would go over better. Sort of puts a whole new spin on a spoonful of medicine makes the a spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down, doesn't it? Okay, it's all clear now. Thank you, Carol Baker. How hard is it, Bob? The Virganda is connected to the egg thingies. The egg thingies are connected to the fallopian tubers. You know, potatoes. All women has fallopian tubers in them. It's not actually a potato. It's more like a parsnip, I think. Oh, help. Mother. Jenny in Wisconsin stand pointing out, you know, this is really bad, but he is married and he has no children, according to his wiki. Maybe we need better sex education. Ha 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 ha, says Jenny. Seeing as representing Vito thinks that there's a connection between the digestive tract of the female and her reproductive organs, I feel kind of bad for Mrs. Barbieri. It's like that BMW commercial that's out now, where grandma's in the back seat and she says, you know, your grandfather loved it when I wore leather. He was a very dominant man, your grandfather. Shut it, Mom! Yeah. I mean, on the one hand, you can't really celebrate this kind of stupid, but somehow or another, you've got to acknowledge it. And you stand in a sort of awe of it. Is it a religious thing? Is it one of those things where like the Bible or something says, and yea, verily, the male shall not know the secrets of the wicked ways of the female people? For they are filthy and covered in sin, or something like that. Yeah, I mean, representing Vito goes home on a Friday night with a nice bottle of Ripple. He says, "Oh, honey, it's Friday," and she says, "Well, not this weekend, honey. Never more. I don't want to hear any more about it. If the sin of Eve is upon you, just say no more." And I'll just put the bottle of Ripple in until you're no longer defiled. I mean, this is a guy who's so dumb he had to leave Texas to be elected to office, and he went to Idaho. Wow. Really? Then there's this. You know, we talked a considerable amount about the vaxxers, and they're anti-vaxxers, the anti-vaxxers and the measles outbreak that they started. And they started the measles outbreak because they were afraid that the vaccines would cause their children to have autism, and the anti-vaxxers don't like autistic children at all. Well, some anti-vaxxers already have autistic children. And while they don't much care for vaccines, they are desperate for a cure for autism. I'm looking, and I've been looking, to try to find something to indicate that what I'm about to share with you is not real. I have not been successful in proving that this is satire or parody. Or just mean-spirited lying. There's a group out there called CD Autism. CD autism refers to the method that these dangerous freaks are using on their children, their autistic children. To try to cleanse the autism out of them. Now remember, these anti-vaxxers are concerned that minuscule, itsy-bitsy, teeny-weeny, tiny amounts of thimerosal, which is a mercury-based compound, cause their children to have autism, even though autism is something whose changes begin being visible in the brain in utero. These people have begun administering what is called miracle mineral solution to their autistic children. Miracle mineral solution is a combination of sodium chlorite and citric acid, which results in something called chlorine dioxide. Chlorine dioxide, in turn, is a reasonably dangerous industrial chemical that is used in the bleaching of wood pulp in the paper industry. These anti-vaxxers, however, believe, and there is that most dangerous word in the English language, they believe that by putting this solution in a bag and connecting the bag to a nozzle, which they then insert in the rectum of their autistic child and use as an enema for said child, that they will then cure autism. I'm not kidding. You can also drink this stuff, according to Jim Humble, who is the quack behind this. Jim Humble, according to Raw Story and Tom Baggioni, Jim Humble found the Church of Scientology not to be nutty enough, and so he founded the Genesis 2 Church of Health and Healing, in which he takes this stuff to Africa and Mexico. In either its oral or rectal form, he claims that this miracle mineral solution cures HIV, malaria, hepatitis, autism, cancer, and acne. No, really, acne. God, and I thought Pat and Debbie Boone with acne statin were a hustle. The Food and Drug Administration, which of course is a job-killing regulatory agency of our dangerous commie socialist Kenyan Muslim government, says that miracle mineral solution is actually dangerous. And is also, and this is a quote, potentially life-threatening. The FDA goes on to say that drinking the amount recommended on product labels can cause nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, and symptoms of severe dehydration. Then there's the job-killing Environmental Protection Agency, who says that chronic exposure to even small doses of chlorine dioxide can result in reproductive and neurodevelopmental damage. Wait a minute. Neurodevelopmental damage. Doesn't that mean that your autistic child could potentially become even more harmed? The motto at CD Autism is Autism, avoidable, treatable, curable. Carrie Rivera is the founder of that organization. And Carrie Rivera says that autism is caused by yeast, parasites, viruses, and vaccines that can be flushed from the body, and demons, and ill humors, and black bile. No, I added the last three. She identifies herself as a certified homeopath. I think she is certifiable if she's not certified. She cites one parent writing in saying, I just wanted to tell you the great news we received yesterday from Bioresonance Diagnostic Treatment. We went there actually for the first time just to check how we've improved with CD, which my 6-year-old son has been using for a year and a half now. And she said, I don't know what you were doing, but just keep doing what you're doing, because you're doing great. She couldn't find viruses, bacteria, parasites, yeast. His body has been cleaned a lot, also from heavy metals. She did saw a virus of measles inside the intestine. That's because of the vaccines he got. We will try to treat that now, and of course not stopping CD and parasite protocol. We're starting also with GC Math in October, and can't wait. We're really happy. Meanwhile, there's the Autism Science Foundation. They say it is important to remember that anyone can start a journal or post a study on the Internet to tout the efficacy of dangerous or useless interventions. Healthcare fraud is a huge business in the United States, and parents of children with autism are often targeted. Fringe treatment providers prey on desperation and fear and deceive parents with numerous unfounded claims. Hoo-wee! Can you imagine? Help me here. How far gone do you have to be to do something like this? To your child. And I'm sure when parents write in to say, Dear Carrie, our child is dead, somehow or another that manages not quite to make it onto the website. Don't you? And if a kid happens to die, well, you know, mommy and daddy weren't administering it properly, or they didn't give enough, or they gave it for too long, but in the wrong dose, right. Sad. Sad indeed. Well, as noted previously, the lines are open if you want to get in on the conversation, if something's burning you up, or if there's a moran that's put a burr under your saddle or a bee under your bonnet. Jump right in. 304-574-8178 is one number. 304-663-HORN. 304-663-4676 is the other. And you're welcome to try either one. We'll take a little break and come back. And we're still $150 away from meeting our fundraising goal for the evening. We were a little bit out in front. It'd be nice to stay that way. I'm Bob Kidd.
Say I know how you feel now, you're
Medicine Jar, Paul McCartney and Wings from Venus and Mars. This is the horn for Moran Monday, the 23rd day of February, 2015. Oh, by the way, I'm going to stay with a note. Robert says, I think it was the 70s or 80s when some doctor in the U.S. was pushing special injections that would cure Down syndrome. It gave a lot of false hopes to many parents. 25 years later, and he's been largely forgotten for the misguided fool or fraud that he was. And that's fine by him, because the purpose isn't to cure or help anybody. The purpose is to, you know, make a fortune and go live on a little island somewhere. Yeah. And by the way, the anti-vaxxers, it's not like they are without, you know, without their own support, I guess you could say. This story comes out of Spokane, Washington. Apparently, the Washington State Legislature is contemplating a bill. It's HB 2009 that would address the misguided practice that is available in 48 states. That allows children to go to public schools without being vaccinated against childhood illnesses. In Washington State, you can refuse vaccinations for your child for religious reasons, medical reasons, you know, and medical reasons are real. I mean, there are conditions that prevent a child from being able to be vaccinated. And that makes medical sense. Religious reasons, don't. Oh, we're sorry. We're going to let little Timmy Typhoid start an epidemic because your invisible friend said he couldn't have a shot. Yeah. But in Washington State, you can also simply cite personal reasons. Well, this has outraged Spokane City Councilman Mike Fagan. He's furious. Mike Fagan is an anti-vaxxer. And he went to a town hall meeting on the bill. And he said, can you imagine a world where we... In a world... Can you imagine a world where we would have to show our shit on an airplane? That's coming next. Wait a minute. I thought that's what all these terrified white people wanted back when they thought that America was going to get the Ebola. Ebola! Here's the punchline. This clown sits on the Spokane Regional Board of Health. Spokane City Council President Ben Stuckert said, I don't think he would have been appointed to the Board of Health by this city council had we known that he had anti-vaccination and anti-science views on this issue. And but Mike Fagan is not going quietly into the night. Of course, he is a 972nd tier right wing blatherer. He's got him a radio show on the American Christian Network there in Spokane. He says, every time this particular subject comes up, people are talking about the tinfoil hat-wearing folks, etc., and so forth. But these people have a valid concern. I have a valid concern. And these people are not represented on the Board of Health. Valid concern.
You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Yeah, me neither. But, you know, welcome to Merca, where all you got to do is say you've got a valid concern, and that makes your concern valid. Isn't that beautiful how that works? That's kind of like being here in West Virginia and having religious tenets. Dear Lord. So, I guess that's our anti-vaxxer segment of More in Monday. Oh, by the way, just to go back for a minute to the earlier Oscars topic. This is too precious not to share. John Nolte is the editor at large for Light Fart Hollywood. They sent him to the Oscars. Well, I mean, he didn't get to go in the theater or anything. I think he just sat and watched it on TV. He got upset every time anybody applauded for anything relating to Selma. Tweeted it all. Oscar crowd gives standing ovation to Selma song to prove they're not racist. Oscar crowd gives Selma gratuitous standing O to prove they're not racist. But that really couldn't keep up with Reed William Dudar. No, Dudar. Not kidding. D-U-D-A-R. Dudar. Dudar. Reed William Dudar on the Twitter wanted to know if anyone else noticed the Oscars 2015 showing as many black people in the audience as they can to prove they aren't racist? LOL. It was Dr. Tartan, Ph.D. Selma did not play by the rules. And Selma is in all caps, and not is in all caps, and rules is in all caps. Yet the Academy Awards were afraid they'll say we're racist, so showcases Selma anyway. And then another tweeter. Every time camera was pointed toward audience, all I saw was Oprah's racist POS in view. Worthless TV show. We got a hearty F them from our buddy the Angry Indian. Yeah, hey to you too, Angry Indian. I had my head turned away from the Skype machine, and I didn't see calls come in. By all means, jump into the conversation. Let's see. I told you about the Oscars So White hashtag. Wingnuts will troll anywhere, anytime, anything. Alan Turing, Stephen Hawking should have been played by black men because racism. Yeah, okay. What do you do with that? I mean, Hollywood gave the Oscar. This is from Charles C. Johnson. At Chuck C. Johnson. Alejandro Gonzalez Iñárritu won tonight because Hollywood heard the Oscars so white criticism. Amazing. And then from the Keep Classy department, let's see, Jonah Goldberg, who really ought not talk about how anybody looks. Skeletor's jaw has more lifelike movement than Melanie Griffith's. Lady Gaga looks like an extra at a Capitol party in the Hunger Games. Larry the Cable Guy, who isn't Larry and isn't a cable guy and never was, decided to channel his inner perv. Wow, Jennifer Lopez's cleavage is really J-Lo. Hell, 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 I don't care who you are, that's funny. Not kidding. And Debbie Schlossel. They won't remember Joan Rivers at Oscars, but Muslim cop hater racist Common gets to sing his dumb song. Yeah, Glory is a dumb song. Okay. Yeah. Quick trip over to the mailbag. Ron and Raleigh pointing out, but of course, none of these assholes are in the least bit racist. Only the people of color are racist. Right, that's how it works now. Let's run over to the Skype line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey, Robert, what's up?
Oh, not much. Another cold night in the hills.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
Nasty cold.
I wanted to ask you a question about this legislation in the House delegates, the Senate. It's before the Senate, I guess, down for its second reading. And that's House Bill 2568, the Pain Capable Unborn Child Protection Act.
Yeah, here we go.
Yeah. Now, we're going to have to face it sooner or later, because I guess they're very much on the verge of passing this thing. And my understanding is the rub comes in there because it's in conflict with federal law. It's, what, 20 weeks as opposed to 24 in the federal bill?
It's lunacy anyway, because the so-called science they rely on is garbage science.
Okay. Well, I kind of figure that anyway, but... what are you going to get if you get a woman in there and she's 21, 22 weeks long, she wants an abortion?
Well, she don't get one.
Well, she's going to say, but you're violating my federal rights because the federal says I can have it to the end of the second trimester.
Robert. We're talking about teabaggers here. We're talking about people who would rather wave that urine-colored flag than the stars and stripes, okay?
Okay.
They don't want no federal government. And they can nullify. They believe in nullification. They believe in the central, discredited, failed concept that, in part, helped facilitate the Civil War.
Well, I was just about to say, maybe they ought to take that little snake flag down, put up that little stars and bars, because apparently that's where we're going.
That's what it's subbing in for. because they got so much hell for displaying their racism flag that they're just letting the snake flag stand in for it.
Mm. Well, I see here who two of the co-sponsors are. And if you read my little snippet over the weekend, it's my gal and the little honey pot from out in the panhandle.
Well, yeah, let's not be sexist.
Okay.
Yeah, you mean the 18-year-old inexperienced moron child?
The kid. But can we call her a kid? I mean, you know.
18, yeah, I think. I mean, I heard Don Nealon refer to 23-year-old football players as kids. So,
okay. Yeah. Anyway, so we're going to have to deal with that. I don't know where the death penalty bill is. You know, that's back in the mix there somewhere.
Oh, it always is. Every year, that one creep from the Eastern Panhandle introduces it.
Actually, I used to know a guy here from the North Central area that was in the Senate. I think he would introduce it every year, and that was Senator Harmon. But this goes clear back to like the 70s and 80s. He was another staunch Republican to have to deal with.
Wow. But, you know, because it's not easy enough to die in this state in the first place. We got to have some help.
Oh, no. You sit here and you think about these people just fooling around with this craziness when the potholes on the road are just, I mean, you could just damn near break an axle on some of them.
Robert, those are potholes of freedom.
Well, I don't know how much freedom I can stand.
Well, we done had us a freedom disaster last year.
When it gets like that, yes. Fortunately, my God, I wondered if that was not worse than, well, even this last Monday, thank God that was not worse than it was.
Right.
When
you look at the
number.
And Gerald points out, the teabaggers don't care about your damn federal laws and shit. Hence the drug testing they're pushing for poor people that was ruled unconstitutional in Florida. Even though it's going to get shot down, they're going to do it anyway.
Hmm.
Because it becomes a lot of this is campaign tactic. Well, we tried to make sure that them damn lazy layabout, no good, no account, shiftless.
Oh, I know how
people getting the welfare benefits had to be drug tested to make sure they wasn't spending your hard earned tax dollars on injecting their marijuanas. We tried, but the activist federal courts done stopped us from being responsible.
Yeah, but how far do you carry that? Now, Ohio, just a couple days ago, the state government in Ohio decided to override the local governments on the fracking issue. Just like they did here in West Virginia, I guess, last year. You know, Morgantown didn't want the fracking.
Right, but the court struck it down.
Yeah, so where does the freedom start and when does it stop? Are we supposed to just ignore
Robert, if it's poisonous, it's freedom. If it's fascism, it's freedom.
Yeah, where I'm going is, if we're so big into small government, then why doesn't the local, the city, or the county government override state government? Doesn't work that way, does it?
Well, no. That's supremacy.
And you look at things like these abortion acts, like this Child Protection Act. I guess this is the same bill that's being introduced in state after state after state.
Because it was drafted by Alec or someone similar, and so that raises another issue. Democrats are crying foul because the legislative services got shut down.
Okay, I saw where you sent me that, but I didn't understand what it meant.
Well, see, in a typically functioning state government, and the same thing occurs in Congress too, for that matter. Let's say a congressman wants a bill. Well, there's an outfit called Legislative Services that's a bunch of lawyers, and their job is to interface with the congressperson's office or the senator's office to craft a bill that will, if passed, be arguably constitutional and not in direct conflict with a bunch of other laws.
Okay, sort of like a Supreme Court type thing. Well, someone that knows that side of the story.
Well, it's a drafting agency.
Whether it's legal, can be legal or not legal.
Right. So you contact Legislative Services and you say, I want bill language to do this. And you go back and forth and you draft it and you tweak it and you send it back and they fix it and back and forth. And so you finally get the bill that you want to introduce in the legislature. Well, that's how it works. Except for now, anywhere that has a right-wing Republican majority in their state house has their own private for-profit, as it were, legislative services.
It's let's use the word they use. They privatized it.
It's called ALEC.
Yeah. They privatized it rather than, and it's something they have that they know the other side doesn't. At least.
And so what happened is, let's say a wingnut wants to introduce a bill saying that all women wanting to get an abortion have to take a little pill, to take pictures of their uterus through their, colon. Well, ALEC has a bill for that. ALEC has a bill for every right-wing wet dream that exists. There's nothing so stupid that ALEC doesn't have a bill for it. And so you just reach into your little ALEC notebook, and you Xerox it, and you put the right heading on it and everything for your legislature, and there's a little line that says your name here, where, your teabagging, urine-colored, snake-flag-waving Republican will scrawl his name with a crayon, and you hand it in, and the bill's enrolled, and there it goes. And it saves a lot of time, so Democrats don't have that. So by shutting down legislative services, they made sure that the Democrats couldn't be introducing any fuzzy little bills that would make things uncomfortable for the, for the snake-flag people.
Mm-hmm. Very, very nice of them.
Aren't they a charming lot?
Oh, yeah. Well, did they get thrown a curveball this afternoon when they had the bill there that they took a vote on and lost it on the charter schools? I think it was an 8-6 vote.
I think somebody screwed up somewhere along the way.
Well, there was something about three Republicans that weren't present there. And I don't know. I suppose maybe they had a quorum. They had enough that they could vote, and he just went ahead and called the vote. That's all I can think.
And see, there are Republicans out there, Robert, that don't necessarily want this entire ALEC agenda. For instance, I don't think the Fire Social Studies Teacher Act of 2015 is ever going to get out of committee because it's that damn dumb.
Mm-hmm. But, well, I suppose you'll have some.
But they won't say anything publicly about it because that would because then the urine-colored snake flag waivers would get their mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking faithful out there with the pitchforks and the torches, and the next thing you'd have to have a committee vote.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, the Koch brothers would run somebody against that Republican. We're talking about ideological purity here. Gerald pointing out, somebody screwed up. Three Republicans didn't show up to vote because they don't want that shit around their neck next year during the election. Bingo!
Well, this reminds me of, I don't know if you ever seen it, the picture there of Barry Goldwater talking about what would happen if the preachers ever got a hold of the Republican Party.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that quote.
Have you seen that one?
Yeah, and he was right.
And that's what you've got now, and what you have, I guess, in there is you have some Republicans trying to fight them to keep them from going too damn far with it, and then you have the others, like you say, these snake-flying people that are just, they're just all in, baby. I mean,
Yeah, and they've got, again, I hope people don't think that, this is just some local discussion of West Virginia politics.
Oh, no, they better learn this is coming in every state
in
the union.
If it's not already there, it's heading for you.
And remember, there's some guy once made a saying, he said, all politics is local, and damned if it ain't. You may think it's not, but it is. It'll be in your neighborhood before you know it.
Well, that's why I pointed out shortly after the last midterms, those states that think, oh, look at us, we're blue, you know, nothing. No, they're such a tiny minority now. It's going to be nothing. It is going to be nothing for the Koch brothers to put their crosshairs on, say, Sacramento, because they don't have to worry about Pennsylvania or Ohio or Michigan or Wisconsin. You know, they can put the crosshairs on Minnesota, one of the last, albeit frozen, but one of the last bastions of anything resembling progressive state government, in a trice. And yeah, California too. You think the Koch brothers can't afford to turn the California state government? Think again.
Well, of course they will. Well, they've got plenty of money. All they need is time. And if they can get things like the media on their side. And I'm hearing now that MSNBC now is leaving from the left.
Well,
you know, they've had a big shakeup here in the last couple of days.
Oh, I know. And it's deeply distressing to me, and not simply because...
And I haven't heard about Sharpton. I've heard rumors this afternoon that he was going to be probably gone, too.
Well, maybe moved over to the weekend, because he does draw viewers. But
we both know MSNBC really hasn't been, pardon my language, ain't been worth a shit since Oberman left.
I think that's an overly broad statement, Robert. Chris.
Well, I mean,
Chris Hayes is extremely intelligent and deserves a platform. The same with Maddow. Lawrence O'Donnell, you know, it does a good program. I mean, if it was up to me, I would just find a happy little farm where Chris Matthews could go and live out the remainder of his days in happiness. And at the risk of repeating myself, MSNBC has never truly been a liberal network. Okay, it hasn't, because you cannot give your 3-hour prime drive time block to a Newt Gingrich contract on America, unrepentant, fire-breathing right-winger, and call yourself a liberal network.
Oh, yeah. And now that's a 3.5-hour block,
right?
Right.
And then there's the God only knows how many hours per week of prison porn.
Yeah, that's one thing that makes me unhappy about them, is that they do that on the weekends.
But you know what? The prison porn is some of MSNBC's best ratings.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
Now, I don't know with who, but apparently so.
Wonder if Fox's ratings go down on the weekend when MSNBC.
No, because they don't stop being right wing ideologues. Fox's ratings are going to go down, and they're going to go down permanently when their demographic dies. Because their median age is 65. That means for every viewer over 65, there's one under.
Yeah.
And if that's your median, that's not a good sign. Because there's not a hell of a lot of room up there, you know, at 112. There's just not a whole lot of those demographics.
No, an older audience leaves you really susceptible. And sponsors don't care about anyone who's older than, what, 50, 55 nowadays, because they don't think you have any money.
Yeah, I mean, the cherished demographic is, what, 28 to 54?
I think it's more like 25 to 40 or 45, maybe. Right in there, you know. They don't care about older viewers.
Well, they used to
knock CBS for this kind of thing, you know, when they would have older programs like Murder, She Wrote on and stuff that would draw an older audience, and they decided, I guess, that they needed to, you know, start moving out of that kind of a thing. They needed to draw younger viewers.
I hesitate to ask anyone or suggest that anyone should do this, but if you go over... And you know what I suggest? You know, put in cotton or those little foam earplugs or whatever so that you won't be harmed.
Uh-huh.
So that the little audio spirochetes won't burrow into your brain. But just watch Fox for a couple of hours and see who's advertising things. Look at what the advertisements are. They're advertisements for scooter chairs and better catheters. And this is not in any way to be critical of or make sport of anybody who has to use those things, but, you know, and buy gold now.
It's probably a lot for Viagra, too.
Probably so. And, you know, there's not a lot of advertising for 29-year-olds, because there aren't any 29-year-olds watching. I think the demographic breakout for people of color is something like less than 1% of Fox viewers have skin darker than notebook paper.
Hmm. Well, what do you suppose the typical Fox viewer is? Probably a man or woman about 60 years old.
No, he's a man. He's white. He's in his late 60s. I actually read on this. He's a registered voter, might be a veteran, is pretty well convinced that Barack Obama is either a Kenyan, a socialist, a Muslim, or the Antichrist, or all of those together.
Probably in church every Sunday morning.
Christian, absolutely.
Yeah.
Not a big Muslim demographic at Fox, and not a very big Jewish demographic.
Now, either. I deal with this in my family. I get into it with my 80-year-old aunt every once in a while. This morning, she's, as you would say, very concerned about those head loppers. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I keep trying to say, well, what are you going to do about it? You know, go to war? You want to go to war? Because, I mean, that seems to be where we're headed. I heard Mr. Malloy last week, and he doesn't seem to be very optimistic about things, and I'm not either.
No, I've got an ugly sense that we're going to go, and we're going to do something really, really stupid, and...
But we almost need something like another 9/11 type thing here first, something to fire people up. And of course, we had the thing over the weekend about the malls being targeted, supposedly, like the Mall of America. So yeah. I'm waiting.
Hey, Robert, what are you thumping on, buddy?
Oh, I'm sorry. I've got a metal thing that I have my computer on.
Okay, because
I'll not do that no more.
I'd appreciate it. It was kind of, I was trying to figure out if that was Morse code or what.
Okay. Sorry about that.
No worries. Well, I do want to make some space for other folks to get into the conversation. But it's good to talk to you. Above all, stay warm. It's going to get hateful again tonight.
Yep. Well, to everyone out there, keep your eyes open. Try to keep your hopes up. We've got to fight the fight. All right, thank you, Bob.
All right, you take care, Robert. Be well.
Well.
Bye now. My buddy Robert calling from Morgantown. 29 minutes before the hour. Remember, there is a premium on the table this evening. A gallon of homemade root beer, courtesy of News Ninja Carol Baker. $75 contribution gets it for you. And we were a little bit ahead, and we are rapidly falling back to even this evening. I guess More End Mondays are a tough day for, just a tough day, I guess. Let's see. If you want to jump in, the Skype line is open now, 304-574-8178, or Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. And the Gizmo line is open, 304-663-4676. That's 304-663-HORN, 4676. I guess you're aware by now of the stupidity of, well, I've been aware for some time of the stupidity of Scott Walker, a man who is now raising the, he's touting, shall we say, his lack of a college degree as proof that he's qualified to be president. Now, there's lots and lots of different ways to get experience, and all of it's valid in the United States, and a college degree is no more an indication of intelligence than is eye color. But he sat in a room, Scott Walker did, and listen to Rudy Giuliani declare that Obama doesn't love America. And Scott Walker is, of course, the son of a Christian minister. And so when it went further, Scott Walker was asked if he thought Barack Obama was a Christian. Scott Walker replied, "Well, I don't know." Yeah, really. Oh no. Thereby sort of dog whistling out to the Republican base that, you know, we all know he's a secret Kenyan Muslim usurper. I just can't say that, you know, to the liberal gotcha media. Ron, with a comment, Bob, it's Monday. You should promote a special show where you promise to do a show in the nude. Contributions guaranteed. Just make sure it's only a radio show. Yeah, or not. Let's run over to the Skype line. Our buddy, the Angry Indian's there. Hey, Angry.
Hey, how you doing, man?
Well, you know,
happy Moran Monday to you.
Well, I'm trying to get through it without chewing through the straps.
Yeah, well, see, you can do what I did. I didn't start to look at any news until this morning, and I just decided to not bother since last Thursday. And it's incredible what can happen in a matter of a few days. And what happens when the news cycle isn't running? Yeah.
Oh, it's astonishing. But no, I keep watching all weekend long, and it's not healthy, and I know it.
Yeah, I needed a break because you just get burned the fuck out.
Oh, no, please. I need one better than, more than I can say. I've had it bad the past 2 days. I'll admit it. I've had it horribly. I've been sitting here, and all I can think about is, you know, and I realize it makes me a carbon hypocrite and everything, but I want to get on a plane, and I want to fly down to Fort Lauderdale. I want to get on one of them damn boats, and I want to go down into the Caribbean, and I want to get me another one of them Captain Christopher Pike sunburns like I had, and I want to drink margaritas with the extra test tube full of tequila dropped into the glass, and I just want to forget. I want to forget there's a world. But, you know, ain't going to happen. No. Being a poor and humble left-wing talker, we don't do no vacations.
Yeah, well, we don't have a whole lot of time. So, you know, just to keep things within time, we can talk briefly, I suppose, about Giuliani because Well, it's being talked about, but no one's really saying anything. I mean, his un-American comment is fucking ridiculous. You know, Bin Laden, if you want to believe the story about everything else, if you follow the 911 thing exactly the way that they're laying it out, and I'm not talking about any wild conspiracy theories, I'm just saying, you know, questions. You know, who really gives a fuck about what Giuliani says? You know, he was in New York City, whatever, on 9/11. He was in London 7/7. Both of these events are questionable because they were both occurred doing readiness exercises. So, you know, he's in both. He's doing the propaganda for both. I don't fucking take him seriously. His history of going after the Black Power movement, you know, had nothing to do with following the law. It was, you know, basically going after, you know, pretty much he was running his own version of COINTELPRO.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong. I was thinking about this over the weekend in regard to the whole Giuliani thing. One, why does anybody give a damn what he says?
Yeah. He used to support the MEC. Matter of fact, he took money from the MEC, the Iranian group, the terrorist group that the U.S. had on his terrorist watch list for I don't know how goddamn long. They were running a fucking war against the agency, right?
Right. But okay, so I'm going back to the morning of September 11th, 2001. Prior to that, I mean, didn't Giuliani actually make matters worse by insisting that the communications center be in the World Trade Center? Do I remember that wrong, Angry?
I don't know. I mean, my thing about Building 7, you know, it's just real structural stuff. I mean, a lot of it, you have fuel that melts down the building, but then you get this guy's paper ID. You know, it's just a lot of things that just don't make any sense. But that's not really what I'm talking about. What I'm saying is Giuliani has a questionable jacket in terms of his political leanings. And like I just mentioned, his support for, you know, what the U.S. said was a terrorist group until very recently. You know, that they legitimized them very recently, and they beat the hell out of somebody, I believe it was in New York, not too far from the U.N., an Iranian diplomat. And he was behind all of this, and no one accused him of anti-Americanism, except for a handful of journalists, I believe, in the U.K. who thought that it was a conflict of interest. If you have people who have any kind of contact with any sort of terrorist group, that they put under, you know, all kinds of suspicion and surveillance, and here you have, and he wasn't alone, and there were Republicans and Democrats in part of this group who were taking money from this group to lobby for them in the United States. And no one questioned his Americanism in the New York Times, in the LA Times, you know. That didn't happen. And here you have Dr. Ben Carson, who I don't give a damn if he earned his doctorate or not. He's a fool.
He's just proof that, you know, you stay with what you're good at.
What, making ridiculous statements that just gets a lot of people confused and brings out the hypocrisy of this?
Well, no, I mean, I thought he was supposed to have been a world-renowned pediatric neurosurgeon or something.
Oh, the hell with him. You know, I mean, this is like Glenn Beck. I hear he's cured now. You know, who gives a goddamn? Who cares? You know, he said he had cancer not too long ago. Who cares? You know, Ben Carson, you know, what I'm talking about is he is black. And the far right loves him. They are neo-Nazis now who are giving him credit online. And they're like, hey, you know, we need to maybe support this particular nigga because, you know, he is saying all the things that we want to hear. And he has more credibility than the 999 guy, the pizza man. You know, and Michael Steele, where is he? He's gone.
Well, Michael Steele's getting paid. He's getting a check.
I hope it was worth it to him. You know, I mean, Mia Love, has anybody seen her, heard from her?
Well, I mean, where's what's his name? Tim Scott in the Senate from South Carolina.
He's going to make a statement. I've been seeing things. He makes a statement every now and again after Piyush Jindal says something, and then he, you know, tries to ride the coattails of that, saying, well, I'm not the only one. You know, like somebody who was dinged not too long ago, some Republican, for putting on his official site. I think it was in the Congress, Senate, well, whatever it was, one of the houses. And he's like, oh, yeah, well, you know, this, that, and the other, you know, Obama's a traitor, this, that, and the other. And he says, well, you can't accuse me of racism because I got the link from Alan West. Alan West is black. Alan West is a Republican, and he's a war hero. He's a war criminal, but he's a war hero. And, you know, you can't accuse me of this. And they're using all these different backdoors, and Giuliani is one of them. He came out and made a statement that he knew he was going to have to apologize for at some point, or quote-unquote clarify, because they're not really apologies any goddamn way. But what I'm saying is if they're going to really give any kind of credence to what Giuliani is saying, and then, you know, we look at his stuff with the mob and everything, you know, he talked a whole lot. When you really look at it, from what I can see, he didn't really go after the mob at all. But he certainly went after black
people. Well, wait, and I don't want to be wrong here. Wasn't his daddy in the mob?
I don't know. I've heard things like that. I don't know. I couldn't find any data on that. You know, just because he's Italian doesn't mean that his family.
No. And that's not what I'm saying. But I mean, I read that repeatedly over the weekend, in connection with this whole kerfuffle.
Uh-huh. And, well, he wouldn't be the first lawyer who, you know, who did that.
But the larger issue behind all of this, I'm thinking back. I mean, I remember there were a lot of sleazy, tawdry things said about Bill Clinton, and you know they had a lot of nerve saying that, being as how he was the best Republican president that we've had since Eisenhower.
Yep.
But I don't remember anybody ever saying that he doesn't love America.
Well, they kind of did. They did when Oklahoma happened. There was some chatter.
Oh, well, yeah.
It didn't stick. You know, because they had initially blamed the Nation of Islam.
But then remember Giuliani follows up and says, well, that wasn't racist or anything what I said because he's half white.
Yeah, which means that it was a racist statement. You know, I mean, he can't find anything else. And then, like I said, you know, 50 years ago, Philly, New Jersey, New York City, anywhere up in New England, if you were Italian, you automatically a member of the mob. You might be able to get some construction work. You might be able to dig a ditch. But that was it. You know, going to law school and that kind of thing, that came after Vietnam. A lot of fellas got the GI Bill and they were able to go to school. So they were able to transcend that, you know. The Irish did it in New England by becoming police officers, and then they became lawyers and became judges, and they gained a certain amount of political power. And I have to admit this because it's true. They also had organized crime groups behind them in the communities that, you know, got that money going, you know, got the politicians to do certain things so that they could get a political end in. African people have never really been able to do that. And then, you know, when we have gotten into those things, we ended up being so goddamn selfish because we didn't have anything because of our own cultural backwardness, right? You know, from being enslaved, from being colonialized, from being told that you're nothing. So, you know, every nickel is important. So you don't really think about the group. And then when we did get young people that thought about the group, like, say, Black Panther Party for Self-Defense or Malcolm X, who we're talking about now on the 50th anniversary of his assassination. And, you know, we don't talk about the group anymore within our community. And we look at these, you know, Jay-Z, who says, my presence is charity, right? And we're not really discussing anything, you know. But that, you know, that can happen. And the Jay-Z does not come out and defend an Obama from a statement like that, which shows how worthless Jay-Z is as a cultural icon. All right, and when he can't defend who was supposed to be his bosom buddy, he went and sold out Assad Shakur in Cuba, right? You know, hanging out with his buddy, you know, texting his buddy, talking about, yeah, we're hanging out on the beach in Cuba. You know, you have to have special dispensation to go to Cuba. What was he doing there? And we're not asking those questions, but we'll want to believe, wow, is Obama un-American? Was he really born in Kenya? Because this particular guy,
that's what this is. That's why I mentioned it. This is the dog whistle to reinvigorate that a year out from the presidential contest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so they're going to start throwing mud. Yeah,
and so Scott Walker, you know, I mean, it's not so much. I mean, obviously Barack Obama can't run again, but what Scott Walker can do by maintaining his silence and saying, "Well, I don't know," is to burnish his credentials with the urine-colored snake flag people.
Yeah. Well, he's been doing that anyway. His whole anti-union thing and his, you know, I'm on the Koch brothers pay list. I mean, the fact that he was punked out by an independent reporter who Walker thought he was talking to one of the Koch brothers and admitted in this phone call of taking ammunition shells, empties, and throwing them out there to say that, you know, the union protesters were inciting violence. Isn't that conspiracy?
Kinda is, isn't it? Yeah.
That's what I thought the whole RICO thing was about. And, you know, I mean, we don't know if I think it didn't happen because this fellow made this audio public. But he certainly goddamn talked about it. Nothing was done about it. And it's the same thing with Giuliani. He will throw this kind of nonsense out there. And then here, Ben Carson, who is black, but he's on the side of the conservatives, right? So he can make a statement about the American fathers were the same as ISIS and get away with it.
Yeah.
And get away with that. You know, where is Chuck C. Johnson, who has nothing else to do other than ruin people's lives or attempt to ruin people's lives?
Yeah, you noticed that he got in on the Oscar hate fest there, didn't you?
Oh, he's going to look for anything to make his little fucking miserable life important. I mean, the fact that he was all for Holly Hobby Lobby and then started slut-shaming her when it turned out that she wasn't, you know, as pure as a driven snow as she was trying to sell herself. He was the first person to turn on her. These are sharks, man. You know? These are sharks. You know, I mean, these are the type of people that older indigenous women tell you that, you know, avoid that type of person. He would eat his own mother. And we're talking about people who will, that they are no regulation, dog eat dog, whoever has the most money, the most guns, whatever, wins. But let me go to church like, you know, John Rockefeller and forget about all the damage I did, you know, Monday through Saturday. And how many people I sent to bed hungry, how many people I caused to commit suicide and go into alcoholism and what have you during his time period. And then he was a steady Presbyterian. He was at church every goddamn Sunday. And he felt that when he cleaned the toilets and was an occasional janitor, that made up for all of the damage he did. Because he would tell the public, you know, read Ida B. Tarbell on this. She said, I sat next to the man in church and his eyes were empty.
Yeah.
He believes that God made him rich. And that if he continues to be a miserly son of a bitch and to take advantage of weak people, this is what he said to his children. People out there are people who are just born to be taken advantage of.
Well, I mean, there's a sucker born every minute.
There's a sucker born every minute, you know. Elmer Gantry, every
minute. Or a victim of monopoly. I mean, and see, that's the thing. Eventually, not to jump over into economics, but eventually this is all going to fall apart. Because, you know, the one thing that people back when they were passing the Sherman Antitrust Act realized is monopoly, given its head, will collapse an economy out of nothing but pure unmitigated avarice, because they never know when's enough. And for anybody,
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but what was getting me about this? You and I were talking about this one time, and we had to stop. And see, we don't have that much time. Game theory. I advise anybody to look up game theory. John Nash, competitive games. The book that he based his stuff on, you can find these things online. It is available. You can even look at my blog. I have links to a lot of these things.
Yeah.
What Bob is talking about right now was written down by, you know, intellectuals working for the government. The madman theory.
Yes, absolutely. And give the website again. We are running out of time, and I want to get another call in here if I can, Angry. But
oh, yeah, okay. Aboriginal writer at WordPress.com, you know, you can find this information out there. What Bob is talking about.
Say it again. Say it again, because I was talking over you. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Aboriginal writer.wordpress.com. But anybody can look up John Nash and game theory, and you will find the PDFs out there. You can find his original work and, you know, that he got his thesis through.
Another hillbilly, John Nash.
Yeah, but he was a smart goddamn fella, man. You know.
Well, no, we tend to turn him out here. That's one of the great tragedies, if you will, of the mono economy abuse of Central Appalachia. You've got brilliant people coming up here who have been consigned to just shitty, hellish lives, and never got to be anything more than the company wanted them to be, which was nothing more than, you know, a draft mule, ones who managed to escape.
Yeah, well, that was the prejudice from the old country, right?
Well,
you know, they picked a bunch of you up and put you in Ireland, and they say, hell, we'll do the same thing in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, and wander them down into, because, you know, the English didn't want to go up against the indigenous peoples.
Nope.
Shit, you know. But, you know, send the Scots in. Fuck them, you know. They'll make more, right?
Well, that was the attitude. Anyway, you be good, my brother, and please, if you can support this show, please do what you can for HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Peace.
Thank you, Angry. Thank you very kindly. And I want to send out thanks to our buddy Reinhard in Virginia for doing a Have a Show on Me for this evening. Thank you very kindly. The root beer will be winging its way to you. Let's go over to the Gizmo line. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, there you are.
Hey, Bob.
Hey.
This is Ed Rabel. I called on another subject.
Okay, Ed. Thank you very kindly for calling in. I wanted to get a few minutes in, if we could, on the O'Reilly, on the O'Reilly story, because I saw your post on Facebook this evening, the one that begins, on behalf of all my colleagues at CBS and NBC who came under fire in a combat zone, and some photos of you and colleagues in Mogadishu back in the day. I take it you haven't much tolerance for the likes of Bill O'Reilly, Ed.
I just, believe that he dishonors and disparages the good names of those people who did, who have been in combat zones in Vietnam, in Somalia, in the Middle East during the Gulf Wars. And for him to hold himself out as a respected news correspondent interested in the truth, and then to lie as he has about his experience, is just unconscionable. And the sense I get from talking to other my colleagues, you know, when I was working at CBS and NBC, and those people who, like Larry Doyle and others who, with, by the way, we just had a Vietnam correspondents reunion in Washington. Bob Sheba was there. Bob Simon, the late Bob Simon, was there. Marvin Kalb and Bernard Kalb. All these people were in Vietnam. And you know what their reputations are.
Absolutely.
And for this guy to dishonor and disrespect all of those who did serve, it just inflames me. It makes me angry.
Well, Ed, let's take just a minute and give people the thumbnail of you know, a précis of your own experience. You were with CBS and NBC. you covered hot spots all around the globe. You know what it sounds like to hear a shot fired in anger.
Yeah, we don't talk about that very much because, first of all, I don't want to bore people with those experiences. But for the record, I was in South Vietnam and Laos and Cambodia for more than a year, from 1970-71, and all over South Vietnam, and covered combat operations there. Everybody knows that, and we don't, you know, we don't display it or promote it. That's simply a fact. Then from there, I was in Israel for 3 years, based in Tel Aviv, covering the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, and that was no cup of tea. From there, I went to Central America and covered the guerrilla wars, the Sandinista Revolution, when the old Soviet Union was still around trying to project power into the Western Hemisphere through Cuba. I covered Cuba, but I covered those guerrilla wars in El Salvador and Nicaragua. And I did not get to Argentina to cover what was going on in Buenos Aires at the time of the Falklands United Kingdom War. But I covered both the wars in the Middle East, the Gulf Wars. So you could more or less call me a combat correspondent. And I write about it in my memoir, especially the time I was in Cambodia in a rubber plantation in Snul, and Mike Marriott was my cameraman, so he can vouch for this. He said it was one of the worst times a veteran combat cameraman that he had ever spent. And we were attacked by North Vietnamese tank-led forces there in Snul, in that rubber plantation in Cambodia. So these are times that...
I was just going to interject. Even in this conversation, Ed, you display a little bit of reticence in even talking about it, because a good journalist does not make himself the story.
Well, that's right.
And
you don't insinuate yourself in the middle of, you know, that often, too often happens these days. You get a person or a reporter who appears on camera for most of the report, and you never see what is going on. You never hear from the real people involved. You hear from talking heads, and I think that's unfortunate. You're absolutely right.
And so just to give people a little bit of background, if they haven't been watching the development of this story, it was a couple of weeks ago when Bill O'Reilly was plastering the word in all caps, bold, giant font on your giant screen TV, liar, under Brian Williams' photograph. And I think you and I both agree that what Brian Williams did was wrong.
Correct.
I don't necessarily think that in the current media atmosphere it's surprising, but it was wrong.
Wouldn't you agree that Brian, when he realized that he had been exposed for the lying that had gone on. He, I think, was a straight up guy, a stand up guy, and acknowledged what he had done, and now is on 6 months suspension. And furthermore, NBC News has also shown, I think, responsibility in suspending him for 6 months. You will never see that out of Fox News because NBC was concerned about credibility. Fox News wasn't concerned about credibility because it has no credibility.
Right, and that was the point toward which I was veering. In point of fact, Bill O'Reilly lied about a Peabody Award.
Right.
He has the notorious "fuck it, we'll do it live, fucking thing sucks, what does that mean" to play us out clip that everybody and their cousin has seen. And I reviewed right. over the weekend the Andrea Macris suit papers, which read like something out of Penthouse. You know, "Dear Penthouse, I never thought this would happen to me." No, that's what it reads like.
Right.
And at no point in time has he ever been held accountable for any of this. So, isn't there more to be gleaned, Ed, from the fact that Fox will not discipline for him for this than there is to be gleaned about whether he is or is not a serial abuser of the facts?
Yeah, I think so, and I think that I don't know if you saw it or not, but if you don't mind, I'll refer to it. It's a piece that I posted on Facebook and also have submitted as an op-ed piece for the Charleston Gazette. I don't know whether they're going to run it or not, but it talks to this very question of whether it isn't just, you know, Bill O'Reilly who ought to be brought to task here, but it ought to be Fox News, the entire Fox operation, Roger Ailes and the others who support him in his lies. And so I wrote about it, and I'm trying to find it here, right here. It is. I won't break, you know, cut me off if I'm...
Ed, you got all the time you want.
Well, I say in my op-ed piece and also in a posting on Facebook is what each of us should remember in scrutinizing the current Bill O'Reilly scandal is that for the Fox outfit, the scandal is not occurring in a normal world in which people are offended by lies, fabrications, and untruth. In the Fox world, none of that matters. Fox and its viewers are not troubled by the same things normal American citizens are troubled by. In the Fox environment, viewers do not prize facts, intelligence, research, the fundamentals of fair play. So,
Ed? Oh, no. Ed? I swear I didn't hit the wrong button. I wonder if Ed muted. Hang on. I'm going to see if I can get him back. I was riveted. Stand by. Sorry about that, Ed. I don't know what happened.
I don't either. I'm sorry. I don't know where I don't know where
cut off. We were at fundamentals of journalism.
Yeah. Well, so I'll just pick it up here and remind your listeners that this is a piece that I wrote for as an op-ed, and it should appear soon in the Charleston Gazette and elsewhere. But I say that, you know, Fox and its viewers are not troubled by the same things normal American citizens are troubled by. In the Fox environment, viewers do not prize facts, intelligence, research, the fundamentals of fair play.
Right.
So when their hero, the Bloviator, Bill O'Reilly, says his life was in danger when it was not, in a combat zone that did not exist, his followers swallow it with gusto, because even though they may know he is lying, they see his posturing as a way to get back at the, quote, liberals, whom they and Bill seem to despise. Now, they are the dispossessed, the post-World War II generation, clinging to the notion that Americans are always heroic, even when they're not, and that America can prevail if it just uses enough military might. They no longer have any authentic heroes in a complex world not to their liking, in which the President of the United States is a black man, a fact that sets their hair on fire. Therefore, do not expect justice to emerge from the O'Reilly scandal. Do not expect O'Reilly to be fired. Don't expect anything but applause for O'Reilly from the Fox audience. That because their hero is getting so much unwanted attention will grow in numbers. Suspend Bill for 6 months? Are you kidding? He's the biggest moneymaker on Fox News. And he is laughing all the way to the bank while giggling privately at just how stupid his audience really is.
See, that I came to the realization yesterday, Ed, that the reason Bill O'Reilly has been writing all of these killing so-and-so books is because in the thin gray settlings that pass for his brain between his ears, he thinks he was. And I noticed somebody picked that trope up and run with it on your Facebook thread the other day. But let me ask you a larger question, because it's not often that I get a genuine sounding board for my concern for the Fourth Estate. Is it possible? Let's say you've got somebody graduating from some really vaunted journalism program, say one of the best state journalism programs in the country at Mizzou, or say Columbia up in New York City. Does there exist the possibility anymore to go out and be a Murrow, a Cronkite, a U, or has it all just been subsumed beneath the tsunami of money and advertising and news as entertainment?
Yeah, I think that is what you just said is the absolute truth. I mean, the thing is, if you really are interested, if you're a serious journalist and you want to do some serious investigative reporting and so on, one might try to find himself a niche in one of the great newspapers of our time, the New York Times or the Washington Post. But I'll tell you, even those folks are having problems because everything is changing in our modern world in terms of what we call, of course, the digital age. The broadcast stations and the networks had found that because of the fragmentation of the audience out there and the need to garner eyeballs in order to sell advertising, the producers have been put under terrible pressure by the companies that own these big broadcasting institutions. Of course, you know, Fox is not a news channel; it's really an entertainment channel. So,
which they have admitted in sworn legal pleadings. Yes.
Yeah, and so what has happened is that all these people under tremendous pressure to garner eyeballs in a fragmented, because you have the internet, you have social networks, you have the cable networks, you have all three major television networks, you have all kinds of fountains of entertainment and information, which gets blurred. So nobody, unless you do an independent documentary and get it on the air someplace with a very limited audience, it's very difficult to be a serious journalist in broadcast journalism these days. And it's becoming even more difficult in print journalism.
Because print is dying, and it's being killed by entertainment broadcast journalism.
Precisely, exactly right.
So is the Fourth Estate just done, Ed?
I don't know. I don't know how it's sorted out. And that's an excellent question. I think that, you know, so many people these days, particularly younger people, they have so many options, you see, and, you know, so many of them turn to programs like Jon Stewart's Comedy Central channel, The World Tonight or whatever, I've forgotten exactly. But anyway, it's you know, he's a major source of information for them. So was
Stephen Colbert, and now John Oliver over on HBO.
Yeah. That's right. And so because the audience is so fragmented and because younger people don't necessarily turn to the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal or whatever, it's an aging audience, if that be the case, continuing to watch what they grew up with. You know, when I started out, it was Walter Cronkite who was considered the most trusted America, not just the most trusted journalist in America, and a lot of people, many people in America still remember him and grew up with him and grew up in that traditional old school, but the networks don't present that kind of news much anymore, and I gave you the reason that particular age group or post-World War II generation goes, a large segment of it goes over to Fox because they want a reaffirmation of the notion that their world is not disappearing or collapsing in front of them. And so what happens is a guy like Bill O'Reilly provides that for them. He lies to them. He reinforces their hatreds. He reinforces their racism. He reinforces the notion that they are still in control. That he reinforces white supremacy, the notion that white people, you know, that they don't live in a world that is diverse, that Latinos are on the rise, that blacks have important positions in government, and women have important positions in all over the world, you know, all over the United States, in companies, institutions, and so on. They want to reject that kind of idea because it's uncomfortable for them. They don't really understand that, and they're frightened, and so they turn to that. You know, Roger Ailes, who runs that operation at Fox, he understands that niche audience perfectly well, and so he appeals to it, and O'Reilly panders to it, and O'Reilly knows that this, what's happening to him right now, is a big plus. I mean, he's relishing.
Well, yeah, this is all. There's no such thing as bad publicity. Say whatever you want, just spell my name right.
That's right, exactly. Yeah.
And it's all just to personalize this a little bit, Ed. I consider you a dear friend. And this is a story I've told to the Horn family before. I'm a little bit of a weird case because. And it's one of those little tiny childhood memory things that sticks for some reason. I mean, I remember being a little fella, okay? The TV was still black and white. I was born in 1963. And all of my little playmates were around, little boys that lived in the neighborhood. And you know how the proud parents always like to ask the little folks, you know, what are you going to be when you grow up? And my one little playmate said, I'm going to be a cowboy. And the other little fella said, I'm going to be a policeman. And they asked me, and I said, I'm going to be Roger Mudd.
Good for you.
And unfortunately, did they know who
Roger Mudd was?
Well, my mom and my dad did.
Yeah, that's right.
Because, you know, I was raised in a family where sections of the newspaper flew back and forth like cards in a canasta game.
Right.
And you know, we were a CBS family, Ed. We were Walter Cronkite all the way. But the thing that stayed in my mind is that I wound up really sort of doing that. But my curse was that while I was watching you and your colleagues, I was just a little too young, and so I entered CNN in 1987.
I see.
And I was there when little baby Jessica down the well happened.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
And that was the moment when everything changed. I used to have it. I lost it years ago. But I used to have a memo that was hand signed, and I think he hand signed one maybe for everybody in the building, if I recall correctly. But it was from Ed Turner, not Ted Turner, but talking about the day you changed journalism.
Wow.
And it was the baby Jessica down the well story. And it created that dynamic that we see now, where one single story will dominate the entire broadcast day, and that you know, if you cut away to do the weather, you're cutting away from the live shot of the wellhead where nothing's happening.
Exactly.
And so you know, I walked away from journalism as such, because went off to law school, different story, but. But I did that because it seemed like what I went wanting to do was not going to happen. Because, you know, whether it be for, you know, and maybe this is me channeling my little inner Bill O'Reilly, I hope not. But, you know, I wanted to go and report on things that really freaking mattered.
Well, the difference, Bob, was that you were serious about what you wanted to do in terms of transmitting information and news about a culture, about life in America, and about happenings. That was what you had on your mind. Bill O'Reilly doesn't have or never had that on his mind. All Bill O'Reilly had on his mind or has on his mind is Bill O'Reilly.
Well, precisely.
And how he might promote himself. So you see, that's where people get it all wrong about Bill O'Reilly. He's not a newsman. He's not a serious journalist. He's a self-promoting, self-indulgent, somebody once described him as a third-rate carnival barker, and that's basically what he is.
Well, it certainly seems that way, because I saw a report earlier today that not only was because CBS has released the footage now, and it's not, you know, it's not the last helicopter out of Saigon situation that he described. And in point of fact, now we know that he was pulled from Buenos Aires specifically for, I guess you'd call it in the military setting, conduct unbecoming.
Well, absolutely. And you know, my old friend, a former Marine, a former LERP guy in Vietnam, Larry Doyle, who produced some of my pieces, he was the guy in charge there. He was the bureau manager in Buenos Aires, and he kicked kicked Bill O'Reilly out of the country because Bill O'Reilly was such a destructive force there.
Because things like turning your lights on in a hostile crowd situation, turning your camera lights on, can actually get you dead.
That's right. And your colleagues and the people around you, you can really create a huge problem by doing something.
Especially
like that.
If you're in a country that isn't particularly favorable to the United States in the first place, as we weren't in Buenos Aires.
And one that had just lost the war and was humiliated, embarrassed, and was about to be turned over.
Just in the couple of minutes that I have with you, Ed, and I thank you so much for answering an on-the-fly call, because people don't know, but I put the bat signal up to you just about an hour ago, and you very kindly responded.
I'm sorry, I just as soon as I got your message, I got back in the house here, and I'm sorry I didn't call in sooner.
Oh, no, it's quite all right. I was tickled pink to hear from you. Let me ask you about what is obviously the world's hot spot right now. The mess that we created in Mesopotamia. You know, the United States put the mess in Mesopotamia. Using your judgment, is it wise? Would it be wise for anybody, journalistically, to be in that neck of the woods right now? And if it's not safe, how do we begin to understand it if there's no viable reporting coming from it? I mean, I see Richard Engel standing on the banks of the Bosporus in Istanbul reporting on something that's going on 1,000 miles away.
Right. I don't have an answer for it. But the only thing I can say is that in making a judgment personally about where to go and what to cover, particularly in a situation in a combat zone, you just have to calculate the risks, and you do as much research as you possibly can. You talk to other reporters who've been there, who are also going into those situations, and then you make a judgment about whether the risk you are taking will or will not pay off, and you have to consider the possibility that the only way to really get the story is to place yourself in harm's way. Now, I know that sounds to many people, kind of suicidal, but many, many journalists have and are continuing to do that very thing, to put themselves in harm's way in order to provide the information for the people. And I think that's the most profound and the most honorable way you can express yourself as a journalist, if you truly are in it not for self-aggrandizement, but to do what journalists have been trained to do and want to do, and that is to provide information about what's happening in the world or what's happening in your neighborhood. So those are the things you have to consider. But it's awfully, I don't know how they're going to be able to do it in that neck of the woods because, and I've been in that neck of the woods, and it's really a dangerous neighborhood.
Well, it is. And one of the things that just depresses me deeply, Ed, is the fact that it looks like we're gonna go and channel our inner stupid some more. I mean, if I was to call a betting parlor, I'd say odds are running what 10 to 1 that we're gonna send some mother's children into that mess. To no real good effect, save for being able to, I guess, pacify that cranky terrified demographic that tunes into Bill O'Reilly.
That's right.
Which seems like a hell of a way to run foreign policy to me.
Well, maybe those people who are the fans of Bill O'Reilly ought to be the first ones sent to those situations and see how they perform. I mean, if they're so eager to for the United States to commit itself and to become involved in a combat, a violent situation in which lives will certainly to be taken when our sons and daughters will be killed, why isn't he on an airplane right now?
Yeah, I mean, he likes being a war correspondent so damn much.
Yeah.
Get all Shakespearean and stand not upon the order if you're going, but go at once.
Precisely.
And you know, this stuff does have real world consequences, Ed. I wanted to share something with you before we end our conversation. I just had a note from one of our dear friends in the community, and she said, "My son just called to let us know he was in an undisclosed location training in California, most likely heading to Iraq. Unfortunately, we were not allowed to ask any questions. Mark my words, in 3 or 4 weeks, we'll most likely find out what the hell's going on via the news." This was supposed to be his 2-day training in Des Moines, and he's in California. And she said, "I hate being a parent that's the last to know. The government will never silence this mama, however. This young man has already served 2 tours and was nearly killed in Mosul on the last one."
Oh, my God.
And again, foreign policy being run by people who are screaming about the Kenyan Muslim usurper. And it's frightening. I can't imagine what it must be like to be in her shoes, and all I can do is sympathize. But Ed, like I said, I thank you so very kindly for answering the bat signal. It is always a pleasure chatting with you. And I don't know if the stars align right, one of these days we'll sit down at the Floridita and have a mojito.
There you go. I'm for it. Let's do it.
All right. Take care, Ed.
Okay. Thanks so much, Bob.
Thank you
now.
Kindly. Bye now.
Yeah. Bye.
Good friend, West Virginian, Emmy Award winning, broadcast journalist, Ed Rabel, who kindly answered my call to discuss the O'Reilly situation. Thank you, Ed. Thank you very, very much. You can find Ed on Facebook, Ed Rabel, R-A-B-E-L, and he's always got something worthwhile to say. So jump on over there if you want. Like I said, I'm always commenting over on his page because he's constantly saying things that matter. Would have been awful nice if he'd actually been the guy that we sent to the Congress back this past November instead of that teabag and interloper from Maryland. Yeah, Mooney, something like that, I think that guy's name is. And I love conversations like that because I think they can get to the heart of things far more than something far more formal can. And that's what makes those conversations worthwhile. Well, I've run 22 minutes over this evening. I apologize for running into Malloy's time. But I felt like since Ed was kind enough to call in, it was well worth the doing. Ron says, "I've been an Ed fan for a couple of years, even sent some money down the black hole to fund his campaign." I did too. We could use journalists like Ed. and we could use politicians with the kind of jib, the cut of the kind of jib that Ed has, Ed Rabel. So thanks, everybody. Thank you, Reinhard, for the have a show on me. That kept us up with where we needed to be this evening. Reinhard will be receiving a big jug of delicious fresh root beer, courtesy of News Ninja Carol Baker. Thank you to all of you who listen, who comment, who participate in this little community, however you do. It is an honor and a privilege to share time with you. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our News Ninjas, Gene and Susan and Carol Baker. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT.org. ACHECT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.